Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome to another week of Conversation Radio. I am Bob, and I'm awfully glad to have you along, either live right here and right now, or at some point later of your choosing via the podcast and archives at whiterosesociety.org. Any way is fine by me. Any way you choose to participate is equally fine. You know the phone numbers, 877-443-2366. That's 877, the numeral 4, head on. If you want us to carry the freight on the phone call, that's toll-free. Or on your own nickel, 304-658-3333. Email rolls in to bob@headonradio.com. bob@headonradio.com. And you know what? You can also participate in the chat room at headonradionetwork.com. It's all terribly easy. It is the full multimedia experience writ large. And it's Monday, and it is a Monday that begins with a story that I wish it didn't begin with, but I don't see how we don't. A man with a shotgun walked into a Unitarian Universalist church, you know this all by now, in Knoxville, Tennessee, over the weekend. He walked in as there were about 200 folks in the church there in Knoxville. They were watching a production of Annie that was being performed by the church's children. The man who walked in began firing. He'd brought his shotgun in a guitar case. The shooter, Jim Adkison, 58 years old. He's being held on $1 million bond. And he decided to shoot up the Unitarian Universalist Church there, the Tennessee Valley Unitarian Universalist Congregation of Knoxville, Tennessee, because he hated the liberals and the gays. Dear Jesus. You know, in America, we have a passion for doing things on the installment plan. And we've done this one too. This is just another payment paid in human blood for our desperate desire to make sure that people can feel all warm and cozy because they got their goons. It's just another installment. It's just another payment made so that some freak in D.C. can feel like maybe his penis is a micron longer or bigger around because he's got him a gun. This is the price we pay. This is the price we pay. It has nothing to do with freedom. It has nothing to do with liberty. It is just the price that we pay so that right-wingers can feel like they're ready at a moment's notice to defend the liberty of the United States. Just the price we pay. And, of course, the stuff's already out there in the media accounts. Well, he was a quiet fella, and he never said a lot to anybody. He was very helpful around the neighborhood. He helped me change a tire once. He rode his motorcycle a lot. I would never have imagined him to do this kind of thing. That's already out there. Well, he must have lost his mind. He must have gone crazy. No. No, 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 no. Everybody else in America may be talking about this in terms of this man's insanity. He wasn't insane. He was perfectly, rationally, coldly, homicidally sane. This is another one of those things that the right wing has to take ownership for. It's time for the right wing to man up and take ownership of what they themselves have created. This is the product of Ted Nugent up there running around in a loincloth hollering about guns. This is easily the product of Charlton Heston. And you can have my guns when you pry them from my cold dead fingers. This is all of that. This is a contract that is written in blood and paid on the installment plan with the blood of innocence. Pure and simple. Haven't found out yet what Adkisson was screaming when he opened fire. The people who were there, who were being shot at, haven't repeated it. Every news account that I run across says something like, what does it say here? Kemper said the gunman shouted before he opened fire. It was hateful words. He was saying hateful things, Barbara Kemper said, refusing to elaborate. Well, now that you know he was after the liberals and the gays, you've got a pretty good idea what he was screaming, don't you? Because you see, there's a war on in America. It's a civil war. Oh, there are no bonnie blue flags flying, and there are no mustard regiments in their butternut or their blue. There are no fife and drum corps. There's no I fights mit Siegel. But there is a civil war going in this country, and it is being waged by the paranoid, twisted right wing against liberals. This all comes home. This all comes home to roost to Michael Savage and Sean Hannity and Bill O'Reilly and his secular progressives and Savage and his liberalism is a mental disorder. This comes home to roost to Ann Coulter and Michelle Malkin and Neil Bortz and all the right-wing hate mongers who talk about people who are liberal, who by virtue of being liberal walk into the future fearlessly, live their lives fearlessly, dream of a progressive future where children and grandchildren have some hope. And the thing that happened yesterday in Knoxville, it was birthed by right-wing hate radio. This guy was a trucker at one point, apparently. Up and down the American roadways, 24/7, with a steady, filthy spew of right-wing hatred, day in and day out. What's your problem, America? It's the liberals, it's the gays, it's Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson after September the 11th, 2001, looking at each other and wagging their stupid heads at one another, saying, I don't see how you can fail to account, well, 9/11 clearly happened because God dropped his veil of protection of the United States, and he dropped it because of the lesbians and the people for the American way and the liberals. 2,300 hours of right-wing hatred for every hour of liberal talk. You know where this goes home to roost. You know. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, hello, Bob. It's David in the unfortunately famous state today.
Yeah, no kidding. How are you?
Really, really disgusted, disappointed. I hate this completely for anyone, anywhere. But I'm especially distressed that it's my state because I really don't want those sorts of things happening anywhere, certainly not in my state. But I could not agree with you more about the origin of that man's hate. Even 5 or 10 years ago, no one would have done something like this in the absence of the mind-rotting, heart-destroying shit. Sorry for the bad one, only be one of them, that has been spewed out by right-wing hate radio for 20 years, starting with Limbaugh. This man is the child of that.
He absolutely is. And it takes, you know, I got to thinking about it. It takes about a generation for this stuff to start filtering down, and you've got to, and like any good propaganda, it's got to be drilled into people's heads every day, day in, day out. Can't get away from it.
Over and over and over. You know, Bob, I really don't think the human gets here with a desire to do what that man did. But let's take just a little bit of history lesson here, or let's consider it. The creation of death within the walls of a house of worship are genuinely, genuinely rare in our country. The example that I use to mirror this in my own recollection and think, dear goddess, it's happening again. Little dead girls in Birmingham because the Klan taught you have to kill uppity colored people. Bob, it's the same damn process. The Klan taught white people to kill black citizens, and Limbaugh, as clearly as the sun shone today here, Hannity, Limbaugh, DeWiener, all of these beasts taught that man to do that just like the Klan taught 800 years ago.
Exactly. Nobody else is going to say this. I mean, there might be some blogging on it here and there.
I'm looking at a
so-called liberal website that's using the killing in Tennessee as a fundraiser. But
that thrills me to death. I don't know who that is, but I may go try to find out so I can. I would love to write them a negative check.
Why do you need why do you need progressive media like op-ed news? Because the right-wing toxic hate media inspire people like Jim D. Adkison to take shotguns into Unitarian churches to kill liberals. We need your support urgently.
I don't, that's, they're operating too close to a crime scene. Now they have blood on their hands. Sorry, folks. You may be doing great work, but you're sure you're trying to fund it with blood. At least wait till the people are in the ground, for God's sake.
Yeah, this guy, it's, I mean, I would, you know, I talk about the 2,300 hours a day of right-wing hate radio for every hour of liberal talk, but, and you can't get away from the fact that the right wing is responsible for this. But I just saw that a couple of minutes ago, and my jaw dropped, David.
That's horrific. And there, whatever that number was, 2370, whatever, 2300, there should be 10 million bumper stickers, 2300 to 1, and it should be in red, white, and blue, 2300 to 1, ask me.
Yeah, this, no kidding.
This idea, and I, you know, in my work life, in my personal life, I've seen that man. I've seen that guy that went in that church.
Oh, this guy, he was a mechanical engineer too, David. Now that's coming out. I mean, this wasn't some bubba sitting around just sucking down the old style up in the hills and hollers. This guy was a mechanical engineer. He had been a truck driver.
It would have been Pabst in his location.
Well, Pabst, okay, it works. Yeah, sure. And, you know, on the good nights, Budweiser.
Yeah, right.
But no, I mean, he had some level of education. He leaves a four-page letter blaming the liberals and the gays.
Well, that just tells me that if he were an educated guy, if he had job skills, it just tells me that the Republican desire to find an engineer in India, find an engineer in China, find an engineer in Guatemala, find an engineer somewhere else, probably fuel this, because if he had mechanical engineering in his background and at one time had driven a truck, 9 times out of 10, a guy doesn't make that life change because he is suddenly fond of corn dogs and, you know.
And he had just been cut off his food stamps too, David.
Well, there we go.
And that was the liberals' fault.
Of course. Oh, yeah. That's where that 2300 to 1 comes in. They have successfully flipped it around and deflected the guilt that they should have, deflected the fault that should be at their feet. You know, if we just make this offshoring process more efficient, America will make so much money, everybody will be better off. Meanwhile, counties like, there's a wonderfully picturesque county south of Nashville, Perry County. They have a 14% unemployment rate. The one employer, just the biggest employer in the county, 700 jobs, poof, just went to Mexico. Oh, well, that's the liberals. Yeah, right. But I have seen that poor guy, the 58-year-old guy. If I would go to my local grocery store, a local supermarket in town, and were I to go there every afternoon between 4:30 and 5:30 and stake it out, I could see this guy and talk to him. He's the same age as that guy that did what he did yesterday. And based on his dress and based on the obvious tough day that he has put in, he's almost certainly a day laborer and he's almost certainly outside. Bob, every time I've seen that man, he has the Made in China Savage Nation baseball hat on.
Lord God. Yeah, we've talked about him before.
Yes, we have. That poor guy, probably working without benefits, maybe cash under the table, maybe whatever a guy wants to pay him for the day's work, paid Michael Savage and his organization $15 for the privilege to wear that hat, probably made in China. And he hears, I know that guy hears inflammatory Bishop Coughlin hate speech every single night, 3 hours a night, on the most powerful FM station in Nashville, Tennessee. And it just disgusts me because, yes, it's a small percentage, but I'm sorry. those people have a big enough listenership that, I don't, all right, fine, only 0.1% of them take up a gun. That means there's 800 of them going to kill somebody tomorrow morning.
God almighty. You know, and that's you know, statistically, you're absolutely right. And I feel kind of sick about this because on Friday evening when I extended the program into the 11 and 12 o'clock hours because I'd missed the first 2 hours of my regular slot, in talking about Michael Savage, I pointed out that there's some guy sitting in traffic as he's talking about how autistic kids need to be slapped, that there's some guy who has an autistic child at home sitting in traffic. He's enraged. He's not mad to begin with at his kid. But he's trapped in traffic, he's going nowhere, he's breathing exhaust. And he hears Savage say that and he goes home and he says, you know, maybe Dr. Savage is right. Maybe I need to slap my kid around a little bit.
Oh, jeez. Oh.
And what do I get instead? Well, yesterday, behind the computer, checking my email, holy crap, it's worse than I thought. It's not the guy who went home. It's not the guy who went home and slapped around his autistic kid. It's the guy who went home, or who went to the church that has the gay people welcome sign in front of it, with 72 rounds of 12 gauge shotgun shells. Convinced he was going to shoot till the cops came and shot him.
Oh, he had all those rounds, and he had a handgun with him.
No, I don't think he had the handgun with him. They found that at the apartment.
Oh, all right. My mistake.
He just took the shotgun. But then, you know, the journalism is found wanting, David, because the bottom paragraph of the, let's see, whose is this? This is the Associated Press story. The final paragraph says, the shooting follows a December 2007 spree in which a man shot four staff members at a missionary training center near Denver, killing two. And the 24-year-old man fatally shot a parishioner at a megachurch and wounded four others before killing himself in Colorado Springs. No, these are not the same as what happened yesterday in Tennessee.
No, not at all.
This was a case of an externalized attack on a symbolic group. The people that did the shooting out in Colorado, they were fundies, trained by fundies, who got mad at the fundies.
Somebody didn't get a merit badge within that fundy thing that happened out there. Somebody had, as I recall, there was some sort of an internal, that was more, you know, that could happen. That was an internal struggle within a more homogeneous group. But
this is a case of...
This guy yesterday, that's an individual that responded to the message of right-wing hate radio in an extreme form. If we think it's the last one, please don't think that. And another analogy, your guy in traffic, that a very small minority that does have an autistic son, he's got three people beside him in that same traffic jam that have normal, active children. And that guy gets home and he is worried about money. He's paying $4 a gallon to sit in traffic and, you know, be poisoned by the fumes from the guy in front of him, and his child acts out at home. Michael told me what to do for you, boy. Don't be acting autistic on me, crack. How many times do you think that played out?
Oh, more. See, that's the thing. I know it did. I don't know it empirically. But I know that it did.
Of course it did. It had to. No, not every father went home and beat his child. But I say again, if that message is out there, so the father stopped short of whacking someone. And, oh, he's only verbally abusive. He just bends a psyche enough to send the kid into some sort of regression. Or his psyche's just bent enough for him to start treating everybody that he perceives as less a man or less a natural woman than himself or his wife.
I remember the man in Florida who beat his 4-year-old to death because he was trying to toughen him up to make sure he didn't turn gay. That was a couple of years ago. But the thing is, they're treated, you know, in the for-profit media, David, they're going to be treated as isolated incidents, as aberrations. There's nothing aberrant about this. These things exist on a continuum.
This is an equation. If I do this, then that will happen. And that happened yesterday. And tonight at 8 o'clock in my market, Michael the Savage Wiener will do this again. And in on that same station later that night, O'Reilly will do it again. And culture and... I don't even
want to
say that.
Well, it's, yeah, you remember when she, let's see, two famous ones. At one point, she suggested that someone should put cyanide in Justice Stevens' creme brulee. That was just joking, you know, just a joke. And then on another occasion, she said the only thing wrong with what Timothy McVeigh did was that he bombed the building in Oklahoma City instead of the New York Times. And then there's, well, then there's O'Reilly saying that, Michelle Obama might need a lynching party.
Oh, and could we just speak a moment about Flimball encouraging total chaos at a political convention?
Yeah, he called for riots in Denver.
You can't say that stuff with impunity. Wait a second. Didn't we used to have FCC regulations that kind of sort of could get your ass thrown under the jail for saying such things over and over and over? I think we did.
Yeah, and or at least we...
Oh, but wait a minute. We deregulated. We all became free, connected, marketplace sorted out.
Charming, ain't it?
But it is.
It's going to happen again, David. And it won't be a copycat crime, because it won't be a copycat, because these are all actions taken on orders from the top.
No, it's going to be a race to see who was second, and the guy's going to be thinking to himself, "Damn, that guy did it first. Well, I'm not going to let anybody get ahead of me."
Because see,
they are.
It might be thought just a little bit strange, but it turns out that. I guess Thursday night, something similar had happened here in my home state.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. It was a kid who decided to shoot out the stained glass window in the Charleston, West Virginia Unitarian Universalist congregation.
Did I not get the memo? Did I miss something? Did they become suddenly more strident? I mean, these are the guys that are usually so low-key, you have to look for them to find them, for gosh sake.
Well, but they're low...
They're out there, but they're not... They typically aren't...
Oh, but see, you're not getting down into that subcutaneous level of the right-wing hate industry and the right-wing religion industry, because they will routinely... Dr. Dobson has railed against the Unitarians. And so have just about every one of these fundamentalist religion industry thugs.
Well, I mean, I'm sorry. As a church, that makes so much sense. I can see where Dobson would be really, you know, his knickers would really be in a twist. I mean, first time I ever went to a Unitarian church... This wonderfully gifted woman that had lifted herself out of poverty. She was born in northern Louisiana, which is, you know, northern Louisiana, southern Arkansas. That's tough country to be a woman, especially with a couple of kids. And she worked her way through college and became a Unitarian minister and arguably one of the premier ministerships in the entire country in Portland, Oregon. The first time I ever went to one of those churches, she preached her text that day was Walt Whitman. So I'm thinking, oh, okay, this is not the Southern Baptist.
No, I remember learning, my earliest experience learning about the Unitarians was being invited for a Sunday service in which several of us read various and sundry poems for the service that day from Edgar Lee Masters' Spoon River Anthology.
Okay, same as.
And I loved it. I'd never met such decent human beings. And of course,
oh my, conversation. Gee whiz.
Yeah, and then, you know, it was just a few months ago that I was in a Unitarian congregation near D.C. because those welcoming, open-minded, concerned people were moved nigh unto tears by what is being done to West Virginia via mountaintop removal. We didn't ask them if we could come over and talk. They contacted us and said, will you please come and tell us about it?
Oh, well, then that explains the hatred. They're not just willing to have the message come to them accidentally. They're thinking. But that reminds me of the level of discussion as I was just kind of mingling through to get to probably the best church coffee I ever drank in my life. The level of conversation that I was hearing, I mean, it covered a whole bunch of bases. There were no boring folks there.
No. And if there was one around here, I'd be in it on Sundays, and we know how I feel about religion. But
this is
something we're going to see more of this. And it's sad, but I think the two organizations that will be targeted are more than likely the Unitarian Universalists and the United Churches of Christ. Because both of them, we can't overstate the effect of the hatred for gay people in this. Because organizations that stand up plainly and strongly and firmly for human rights for everyone run directly contrary to all the vile, filthy spew that has been pumped into the American zeitgeist, if you will. From the first moment that Rush Limbaugh turned his microphone on.
No, the right is, with the right, if you're not down with Leviticus and you don't have a bushel of stones on your back deck just waiting for a queer to walk by, come on down, sure, we're open to that. Oh, bring your friend. Oh, your committed friend? Wonderful. Drop on by. Oh, yeah, that sets them off.
And this is, I'm afraid, and I don't run around being afraid. But I think it just caused me to start looking backwards, David, and I realized that there, you know, from whether it's Timothy McVeigh or some crazy bunch of fundamentalists from Yemen, Egypt, and Saudi Arabia, there is a right-wing attack on liberal people in this country because, of course, you understand that bin Laden deems the whole American Republic liberal. He and you couldn't find enough distance between the positions of Rush Limbaugh and Osama bin Laden to slip a playing card through.
If you take it back to just abstract operating systems, there is none. And on this one little funny thing that has occurred to me every time I do it, because I like to spell Fundy, F-U-N-D-I-E, every time I spell check an email with Fundy in it, it says, Fun, the recommended change is fun die. And I sort of chuckle. Well, today, Bob.
It ain't so funny anymore.
It ain't funny, McGee. So, on that note, I'm going to let the professional callers take over. I'm out of here. But
well, thanks again. Thanks for chiming in. I do appreciate it. It is your home state.
Yeah, we have a little disgrace to go on our permanent record today. But I say again, the human doesn't get here hating, wishing to kill. It has to be taught. And just when we've, to some degree, pushed the Klan out of the picture, we've got that 2,300 and some odd hours to one hate speech out there, and this is the fruit of it. And you're right, it takes a generation. You know, it's one thing for that 58-year-old to be wearing a Michael Savage hat, but when I see those goddamn Bill O'Reilly t-shirts on a 20-year-old, I get sweaty. I get nervous.
For good reason. That means it's survived another generation. Yeah. David, take care.
Yeah, I did. Thanks, Bob.
All right. Bye now. Your thoughts? Phone lines are beginning to light up, but your thoughts are more than welcome, and I hope you'll share them. Hi, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob.
Hey, how's it going?
Well,
haven't heard from you in a while. You doing all right?
No, well, my job changed. I don't get home till about 8 normally. So.
Well, I knew you were still out and about because I saw your emails from time to time. So.
Oh yeah, it just they changed my job around. I just had to be off this week.
Oh, okay, okay.
So that's why I can usually get home and hear you about the last hour, and then I have to get up in the morning and listen to the repeat.
Oh, okay.
Oh no, it's like I say, it's busy as can be down here. Shoot, we've got, you know, all the national news people in and all that, so that'll last for about a day or two. If you go to the local place, like the Knox News, the New Sentinel, our local paper, they've got a whole bunch of good stories. Some of them I can't link them to you. I wish I could. They have the one, you know, tell everybody about the fact that when they searched this place, found O'Reilly's book and Hannity's book and Savage's book.
No kidding. I hadn't seen that yet.
Yeah, if you go to KnoxNews.com, it's the, you know, so it comes up on the front page where when they did the search, they found, you know, when they found these pistols as they were talking about. He lives in an area of town called Powell, which is incorporated. It's north here in Knoxville. And when they went in there, you know, they found a whole bunch of stuff. And I don't know what all they found in the car. You know, they were going to tell us everything, and that's okay. I understand that. But, you know, the little bits they're letting out here and there, we'll see. So I'm just waiting to see when our newspaper goes talks to the local Fundy radio station and ask them, how do you all feel in the fact that you all carry all these people spewing hate 24/7?
Yeah, well, at what point, and they'll never do it, but that's the point, Luke. At what point do they take ownership for this?
Yeah, as I say, you know, I'm just curious to see. I mean, I'll probably look at a bit of news hounds probably tomorrow because I can't stand watching them. But I'm just curious to see if they'll even mention it. I'm sure that it's our fault. Oh, it's now they let them gays into a church, you know? Oh.
Let's see. I guess WBIR-TV got hold of his letter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they got it published on their webpage.
Yeah, he wrote in the document that he targeted the church, quote, because of its liberal teachings and his belief that all liberals should be killed because they are ruining the country, and that he felt that the Democrats had tied his country's hands in the war on terror, and they had ruined every institution in America with the aid of the media.
Yeah, the only thing
that's right out of the books, Luke.
Oh yeah, and the only thing, and I hate to say it this way, and please forgive me for saying it, the only thing good in it was the fact that he at least decided he was going to blame adults because they said if he had wanted to, he could have killed a bunch of kids on the way in. Now where he started shooting, you know, this was at a children's pageant.
Yes, yeah, well, it was a production of Annie.
Yeah. So, you know, they said he at least targeted adults because they said he could have killed a bunch of kids. You know, but they, and I'm sorry to put it that way, you know what I mean. But, you know. So apparently what happened was he emptied the gun, and when he started to reload, they played body tackle on him.
Yeah. Yeah, because it was a semi-auto shotgun. You know, it wasn't pump action or anything. No, no, no.
So once he emptied out and had to start to reload, that's when he got jumped. At least they didn't let him put a gun in his mouth.
Yeah, and what was the first book they found? I'm looking at it here now. I really appreciate this, Luke.
Because,
well, it makes me feel a little prescient, but this wasn't a long reach. The first book they found, Michael Savage, Liberalism is a Mental Disorder.
Yeah. Well,
the second book, Let Freedom Ring by Sean Hannity.
Mm-hmm.
And then the O'Reilly Factor book by Bill O'Reilly.
And like I said, that may have just been the one they first came to you because you know good and well he's got to have more than just that.
Oh, I'm sure he's got See I Told You So or whatever the heck that thing is by Flimball.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I remember when...
The Blonde Scarecrow.
Yeah.
I'm sure that when the stuff finally comes out that he's had a whole bunch of stuff, you know what I mean? So it's one of those things to say. So if y'all want to get the local pitch, like say come to either WBR, which is one of our, who is the NBC affiliate here in town, or like say Knox News, which is Scripps Howard paper. But like say you'll get the local stuff, so you'll get it without the AP filter put on it. So.
God, I'm just sitting here looking at this as you're talking, and I'm just stunned.
They got a little map in there showing what happened.
Yeah.
there on it, so you can see what actually how he did it. You know what I mean? See the actual physical parts of it. So, in that respect, and like
okay, all right, you'll get the first wager in this one, Luke. How long before Fred Phelps and his crowd chime in on this, or have they already?
I haven't heard anything. I'll be honest. I was on vacation today, so I pretty much tried to put it out of my head today. I'll be honest. Because I didn't want to think about it, because the more I think about it, the more I just want to screw outside and scream for about 10 minutes.
You know,
I've tried to stay away from it for today. I figure I'd let the professionals sift through it, you know, and tell us what they're going to tell us.
Well, I wonder if Savage knows that his book was high on the reading list.
Well, like I say, I'm betting that our local funding station is a radio station called WNOX. And of course, you know how that is. It's like, say, they go from Limbaugh to, I think it's the Savage. I don't even pay attention to theirs. I know they carry Hannity about now. And who knows? You know what I mean? It's one of the things. It's like, say, other than like, they got 3 hours of local, which they have a fundy who stands up and cries, he's an independent.
Yeah. Well, that, right.
That, of course, is the way they all hide behind it. Oh, no, I'm an independent just because we carry all right-wing stations. No, no, no.
Yeah, that's the dodge.
So it'll be interesting, like I say, over the next few days just to see, you know, as they tear this apart, to see if anybody bothers to go ask some of the, you know, on the national, see if anybody goes to ask them. I'm curious, will CNN or MSNBC go do one of Bill O'Reilly's surprise interviews on somebody? Well, they get in Bill O'Reilly's face and say, Bill, how do you feel now that you killed a few people?
It ought to happen, Luke. It ought to happen.
You know, so, but, you know, we'll see how that goes on the national, and we'll see here on our local if y'all want to keep an eye on it for probably the next 2-3 days.
Well, I will be keeping an eye on it because what's going
to... I heard searched on there, and I can't find the dang place to send the link on that story about O'Reilly and Savage and all that. It's like, I was going to link it to you, you know, send it to you, but
yeah,
there's no place there.
Well, when in doubt, copy the URL and throw it in an email, because I'm going to be sending this around.
Well, I've heard you talk to David, and unfortunately, this week I'm actually going to go get my system upgraded where I can actually call you and be on the computer at the same time.
Well, hey, that'd be nice.
Yeah.
I'm
still living in Stone Age. I'm still a dial-up man.
Oh, well, I was going to say, you going to get all broadband on us?
Yeah, I'm hoping to. I got to go this week and look at all the numbers and, oh, God.
Yeah, I know.
Sell my soul, but, you know, that's part of the way it goes.
I feel kind of bad. Well, I feel horrible about the whole thing, but, you know, I'm seeing the news coverage, the so-called for-profit media mainstream coverage of it, and it's all still being treated like an isolated event.
Yeah. Well, that's what I mean. It's interesting, like I say, that's why I gave you the website. Is everybody needs to go there and see what the local people are saying, because the local people are telling you what's going on. And then look at the AP or the CNN or even MSNBC and see what they let you hear.
Yeah.
You know, see what the differences are. What aren't they telling you on the national that they're telling you on the local? You know, that's kind of an interesting thought right there. I'm gonna call somebody over at UT and ask them about that. You know, has the journalism review over there thought, you know, let's see what the difference is between what we locally know and what's being allowed to be known nationally.
Yeah, here's one for an enterprising journalist. Let's get a look at this guy's voting record.
Oh, well, did you see the story on there talking about his wife's order of protection?
Yeah, because he had threatened to.
This was not something new. They knew he was.
But that's the other part of the discussion that needs to be brought up. He had threatened to kill her. I guess he maybe still had the .38 pistol at that time. But the shotgun that he used for this attack, Luke, he bought at a nearby pawn shop a month ago.
Oh, yeah.
This was a month in the making, a month in the planning.
Yeah, I'd say it would be interesting to see, you know, what is it that was the trigger? I mean, excuse the term.
But see, we can't talk about having... about limiting access to firearms. You know, pawn shops, guns. What are pawn shops doing selling guns?
Well, that's nothing. Wait till the, you know, once a month or so, they have nice little flea markets essentially You know, you can go buy a gun if you know where who to ask.
Yeah, fire. That's exactly what they are. Otherwise known as gun shows, they're firearm flea markets.
That's it. We have one here every year. You know, they bring out a bunch of some celebrity paraphernalia. You know, we have Kevin Costner shot a pistol from Silverado. We have such and such from Rambo. You know. They always run them like, you know, it's like it's a celebrity event. Come on, we're going to go see some of this good stuff. Meantime, while you're there, here, buy a couple of shotguns while you're in the place.
And meanwhile, I've got, you know, I get these right-wing solicitations for interviews, and they're forever sending me offers to have a guy named Larry Pratt from Gun Owners of America, okay? Now, Larry Pratt thinks the NRA is a bunch of lily-livered sissies. They're not hardcore enough for him.
Oh no!
And so I was invited to have Larry Pratt on my show via this press thingy, whereby he would talk about the humongous miscarriage of justice against a man from Berlin, Wisconsin, who's going up the river for possession of a machine gun, because he had a semi-automatic rifle that misfired and shot out three rounds with one trigger pull.
Well, of course he has to have it to go duck hunting. Didn't you know that?
Here's the fun part. He only got in trouble because he loaned the gun to a neighbor who wanted to go a shooting.
Wonder what he wanted to go a shooting.
Well, he's going to go to the range and do some target practice and so forth. But you know, how does that work, Luke? You're sitting there one Saturday afternoon, and there's a knock on your door, and I guess Bugs Bunny's standing there, and he says, "Pardon me, could I borrow a cup of sugar and a semi-automatic rifle?" What?
Well, you know, it's like these people, you know, you always at these things we've had before. Well, they went over to Grandpa's house and opened up his gun cabinet. And took out, you know, ding, 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 ding. You know, wasn't that what happened with the two in Colorado a few years ago? But that's where they actually got the guns. They went over to Grandpa's house and sort of cleaned out his gun cabinet.
Yeah.
I think
somebody's gun cabinet got, yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, that's it for like, you know, and these parents, they have no clue. Oh, no, my son wouldn't go into that gun cabinet.
I tell you what, there's another passage in this Knox News article you referred me to, Luke. Adkisson told Still that, quote, he could not get to the leaders of the liberal movement, so he would then target those that had voted them into office. Well, just checking here, but in Powell, Tennessee, what liberals could those Unitarians possibly have voted into office?
That's the thing. You know, it's kind of hard to find a Democrat around here in office a whole lot. There's one or two in our council and in the commission, maybe, you know, in the county commission, but that's about it. And, I mean, that's like 2 out of 17, you know. It's like, say, I hate to tell people this, but unfortunately, you know, I'm sitting here in the middle of right-wing heaven. You know what I mean? It's like, say, we ain't had a Democrat around here in a while. I mean, Bredesen is our governor, but like, say, he's from the middle of the state, you know. But it's like, say, over on this end of the state, they'll tell you there are Democrats few and far between, especially in office.
And see, that tells me something. That doesn't tell me that this guy's insane, Luke. That tells me that this guy it tells me the depth to which the indoctrination by the Savages and the Hannitys and the O'Reillys has gone.
But they're telling you, not, we ain't wanting you to go after the leaders. No, we're wanting you to start shooting regular people.
Yeah, because after all, liberalism is a mental disorder.
Yeah. I'm surprised, like I say, I've seen a couple of articles on it. But like I say, I'm surprised that this thing with Savage and this autism. I'm surprised they have, you know, that. I assume in New York he's probably on an ABC network. You know, WABC, that's the big one there. I'm surprised that they haven't just literally just roasted him. You know, you'd think that, man, you know, that families and stuff with such would already been just wearing their phone line out.
He's on WOR.
Oh, WOR. Oh, okay.
Yeah, and they, I mean, they've picketed, and they've picketed the home, the home studio in San Francisco. And, of course, and it turns out that a lady named Fournier, I believe Wendy Fournier, is the head of a national autism organization. She actually went on the Wieners show, and he muted her channel when she was disagreeing with him so that he could make it sound like she was giving him absolution.
Oh, yeah. It's like I say, one thing I've learned from watching and listening is if you're ever interviewed by these people, you make sure you're in the studio. You don't sit on a phone because, like I say, they've got that little button that cuts off.
Well, see, I'll take it a step further, Luke. You don't talk to these people.
No.
You know, there were, just here, in my neck of the woods, there are good liberals, good Democrats who like to call and have it out with the right winger on the radio over there in Beckley. And I said, you know, don't do it. He controls the dump button. He controls the pot that you're coming in on, and he doesn't play fair. And I don't care how right you are on the facts. He will win by shouting or by muting you.
Well, it's like if you ever watch, you know, on some of the scream shows, we call them, you know, CNN or even MSNBC, if they've got a subject they don't want to discuss, they don't care what they say. They'll just sit there and shout anything just so you can't be heard. I mean, you know, I've sit there and watch them on MSNBC where, you know, they'll have somebody on or CNN where they'll have Stephen Hayes or somebody on. He won't argue about it. He'll just sit there and just keep talking so you can't hear the other person talk and cry that, oh, you aren't letting me speak.
Yeah, exactly. Well, please keep us up to date on this as things develop, because I'm sure we're going to find that, again, this is the kind of cop work that I would do, but a lot of people probably won't. Go find what the station presets are on his car radio.
Oh, well, like I say they've got his stuff, and then, you know, like I say, I'm thinking it down the line since they put this story out. You know, the Knox News had this, and I'll give him credit for that. So they're gonna probably follow this up and tell us all the things, you know, that they find about him. I'm sure, like I say, I'm surprised we didn't get to see a picture of his bumper to see what the bumper stickers are on his car.
Well, there's another one.
You know, what are some of the things, you know, because like I say, we know who he's listening to. I mean, we can go down the list. There's probably a top five we can name right now.
Well, check this out.
The local preset is on our local channel. It's called WNOX 990 AM. And that's, like I say, that's the local right-wing Fundy station. Then there's another Fundy station here that's even the old-style Fundy station. You know, these are where you have the local rednecks talk all the time.
Well, here, check this out. You know who Tony Perkins is, right?
Oh, yeah.
Family
Council?
Family Research Council.
Yeah.
Family Research Council Action President Tony Perkins. They released a statement regarding the shooting there in Knoxville. And he said, "It is hard not to draw a line between the hostility that is being fomented in our culture from some in the secular media toward Christians and evangelicals in particular and the acts of violence that took place." Oh, God. You know,
he didn't attack a church. He attacked a Unitarian church. Which, like I say, our Unitarian churches are the ones that essentially say, come on in. We don't care who you are. Come on in.
Yeah, well, that was Perkins' statement. I'm sorry, I was wrong. That was Perkins' statement after the shootings in Colorado. The secular media.
Change a word or two, and you'll see the same thing.
Right.
I mean, it won't be any different. You know, now I'm sure it'll be the liberals' media fault they're trying to connect him to all these good people like Michael Savage. You know, it's the liberals using this as a weapon. It's like I say, just watch, like I say, for the next couple of days and just see all the don't know what a word I want to use, taka, that will be coming out.
Yeah.
From the right-wing fundies, and I'm sure that all, you know, before they're done, they'll, by the end of the week, they'll decide it's all the liberals' fault for doing it. How dare you?
Well, if those liberals weren't out there ruining America, this wouldn't happen to them.
Well, you saw today, I just turned on the news a little while ago, and I saw that our new budget deficit for this year's out.
Oh, yeah?
$482
billion. Yeah, and this guy...
9.5 trillion, we've already got, we're touching 10.
Yeah, this, well, like I said, this shooter had recently got cut off his food stamps.
Yeah, and he apparently one of the things they said was he was upset because he couldn't find a job. You know, I'm sorry, there's jobs out there, you just have to look for them.
Well, no, but what David, what David said is so true. This guy, if this guy really did have training as a mechanical engineer, guess why he can't find a job?
Oh, yeah.
He can't find a job because his job is in India and enterprise zone in China. His job is in Vietnam.
Well, or like you said, he was also trained as a truck driver. Well, amazingly enough, there ain't a whole lot of truck drivers because we got fuel that's costing, you know, $4 for gas. I don't even want to talk about diesel.
Yeah, but he, you know, before he did his shooting, the new McCain ad was already running that said high gas prices are Barack Obama's fault.
I know, God. You know,
I mean, this is broad spectrum stuff, and I don't know if anybody out there, with the possible exception of us or maybe Malloy over at Nova M, have the guts to point out that this is their doing.
Oh yeah, isn't it amazing though how like say this past week, and we'll get into politics here for just a second, how this past week, every time John McCain's opened his mouth, he's seen how much further down his throat he can shove his foot. But, you know, I don't hear a bunch of them saying, you know, getting on him about the fact that he's really bad. You know what I mean? It's sort of like, well, he just had an off week. It's like, no, I'm sorry, that's not an off week. But, you know, that's sitting there, you know, and just seeing how low you can go on some of this stuff. And then turn it around and, you know, and then saying, well, you know, Barack's not had that great a week either. It's like, I'm sorry. Tell me what he's done wrong this week. You know, I mean, it's sort of like, then tell me what McCain's done right. But yet, if you listen to our national media, you wouldn't know what happened.
Oh, and by the way, where McCain's concerned, MTV has decided to accept its first political ad ever. Guess what it is?
Oh, gosh.
It's a McCain ad. Telling young voters that they shouldn't have any hope. Yeah, really. Well, Luke, it's good to hear from you, brother. I'm sorry your work hours changed, but chime in any time, all right?
Like I say, I keep sending you stuff on the email. I figure that's the best way to stay in touch.
Do, and try to, you know, anything that busts out, if you see a link to the actual letter the guy wrote,
okay.
Send it along.
Like I think they'll have something over there on the WBIR's channel over on their website if you try them.
Okay, good deal. Well, thanks a lot and take care.
You too.
Bye.
Bye.
Long time since we heard from our buddy Luke in Knoxville. Mercy. Yep, the liberals were getting these food stamps. Mercy sakes.
Hi there.
Hey, Susan, what's up?
I really hate being right.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I know.
When this first broke, I turned to hubby and I said, since I saw it was a Unitarian church, I said, you watch this, the knuckle dragging right winger. Crap, I hate being right. Really do.
I know. I know. And I hate the fact that nobody is going to address it from the standpoint that you have and that I have and we all have.
And I hate the fact that nobody's gone out to McCain or to any one of these hate mongers and said, this is your fault. The blood is on your hands.
But that would be playing the blame game. See, anything that but bear in mind, Susan, please, anything that the right wing is responsible for, they are not allowed to be blamed for, because while they preach personal responsibility to working people who go and vote them in, for heaven's sakes, they themselves are absolved from personal responsibility.
You know, my dear departed mama had an answer for that. It was called the back of her hand.
Yeah. But you can't backhand the entire for-profit media structure.
Well, I realize that, but that's what these people, and that's what Sydney needs, and that's what these, that's what the Savage Winger has needed all along. They need somebody to make them take responsibility. One of the things that my kids hated hearing from me, but they heard it often, was, you blow it, you fix it.
Yeah. Well, why is this guy, I looked earlier, and I can't find it anywhere in any of the reporting in it. Why is this man not being called a terrorist?
Another good question.
How is he not
because
a terrorist?
He's a right-winger. Because he's a right-winger.
And everybody knows that pig-licking right-wingers couldn't possibly be terrorists because they love America.
Same reason you never hear Timothy McVeigh being called, quote, a terrorist.
Right. I mean, I'm looking at some comments on the story. Here's one. And this is just sad stuff, Susan. I knew this would happen sooner or later. We quit going to the local United Church of Christ because of the potential of something like this. The expensive haircuts over at Fox should probably just STFU on this one, and a moment of silence will do. A couple of comments down. This is from the blog post over at Crooks and Liars. A couple of posts down. I'm from the area where this occurred. It doesn't surprise me one damn bit. My neighbors scare the hell out of me. They're all wound-up gob followers who honestly think that they need to be ready to kill for Jeebus because the liberal menace is tearing their country apart. Not the last 8 years of nonstop war, waste, graft, and financial destruction wrought by the slugs and their help the rich get richer policies. No, it's got to be the liberals, because the bobbleheads on Fox Noise tell them so. You could set some of these idiots on fire, and they'd be convinced they were burning because somewhere a gay man is married.
It's the classic Nazi tactic. You can get away with anything as long as you give the people a scapegoat.
But even on our side, a few comments down, as is every tragedy, this appears to be an unfortunate act of a crazy person. This guy's not crazy. He's not crazy by any textbook definition. I'm almost certain that he will be sane for trial purposes.
Oh, yeah. He's not crazy. He's been indoctrinated.
He is, precisely, he is acting rationally within the confines of his indoctrination.
The definition, as far as I know, you'll have to double check this with Rick, is the ability to tell right from wrong and the ability to distinguish reality. And I'm pretty sure this guy meets that test.
He knew what he would. Look, he planned.
Yeah.
Okay, A, he planned. B, he left a detailed note manifesting the whys and wherefores of why he was doing it. He fully expected to die. Yeah.
Yep. So he knew it was wrong, and he expected to pay the ultimate price.
I don't know if there's any truth in this, but I see one person noting that apparently Greg McKendry, who took the blast, was apparently a well-respected history professor at the University of Tennessee. Liberals. Because, after all, history's one of them liberal arts.
Liberal who was willing to, in the purest sense of the word, pay the, what is that?
Well, this is...
pay the last full measure of devotion.
Well, this just rolled in via email, Susan. Let's be plain about this. Left-wingers spike trees. Left-wingers burn SUVs to prove a point. Left-wingers throw wine bottles full of kerosene at tanks or police cars. Right-wingers kill women. Right-wingers kill children. Right-wingers kill left-wing leaders, Martin, Bobby, John. Right-wingers kill left-wing leaders. And that's what you've got here with this church in Knoxville. They were being a progressive, leading voice in their community. They were openly not just tolerant, but openly welcoming of people who in that neck of the wood are still deemed to be pariahs. They had a little cafe where gay and lesbian high schoolers could gather in safety and peace. They were attacked for that. They were being a progressive leader in their community, and the right wing murdered them in cold blood. You know, I believe there's two people dead now out of it, and some of the people who are still in the hospital are in critical condition.
Okay, now I can tell you what will not happen.
Okay.
Okay, in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, a few years ago, the order started up and started kicking appeals up, and it went after some black people and some Jewish people. And in this case, what caused the big hoorah was they went after a Jewish couple. All of a sudden, almost every home in that town suddenly started sporting a menorah. And they basically drove the order out. They said, no, we don't want you here. There were marches. There were the whole nine yards. They had armed guards guarding these people.
I don't know how.
See anything like that in Knoxville?
No.
And that's a shame.
The Presbyterians have come out and offered their condolences. They're a couple of doors down from the Unitarians. The
you won't see any action.
You might see a little hand wringing from the Southern Baptist cultists, or something that's equally pervasive through the South, the Church of Christ, not the United Churches of Christ. No, these are the hard right wing weirdos. But no. Because the thing is, you're going to have to start asking questions about guns. Because you can't, see, that's the way you get away with, the for-profit media will get away with this, Susan, is, but well, it was an isolated incident, and he was a deranged man, who just, he snapped. And we're not going to talk about the fact that he didn't own a shotgun, but he went to a pawn shop, for God's sakes, a pawn shop, and picked one up expressly for the purpose of blowing away the people who are ruining this country. We can't have that conversation. We can't have...
Yeah, well, the way Idaho got around that was simple. They had the armed... And let's face it, in Idaho, there's a lot of guns in Idaho. They had the people of Coeur d'Alene who were sensible. They got out their guns all right on the side of these people who were being harassed. They said, okay, you want to come at us? Fine, you're going to have to come through us. You come on. Let's just have us war. We outnumber you by a lot. And the order being predictably bullies back down. And they left.
Well, Susan, I'm going to knock off the hour here for a little interlude and catch my breath.
One real quick point.
Sure.
Kind of a counterpoint. Another right-wing fundy creepazoid. St-
state legislature from the wonderful state of Oklahoma was nabbed trying to get into the state house.
Oh, yeah, our buddy Sally.
Yeah, wonderful Sally. Gay-hating Sally. Bless her heart.
Trying to take a gun into the state house.
Ugh. Snarl.
I know.
You have a nice night. Goodbye, love day.
Will do. Take care, Susan.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. I want your thoughts on this, because this has taken me to a very dark and frightening place. Because you and I both know. We know beyond a shadow of a doubt that given the listenership numbers of right-wing hate radio, whether it's O'Reilly or Savage or Limbaugh or any of those other kill jocks, that statistically there are hundreds, if not thousands, of other people just like this Adkisson. And it'll happen again and again and again and again. And if you say anything about guns, it'll, see, he's a liberal, he thinks it's the guns' fault. No, it just would have been a lot easier to subdue this son of a bitch. Self-made. If he'd only had a knife or a ball bat. That's all. But, you know, I'm crazy that way. So you know the phone number. 877, the numeral 4, head on. Chime right in if you want. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
Chiefs, just for law and order. It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Soon past the hour, rolled a little over the top of the hour. I had planned for a guest on the program this evening who is on the line right now. Based upon what had happened in Washington, D.C. this past Friday with the impeachment hearing in the House of Representatives, well, the sort of impeachment hearing, I thought that there could be no better person to discuss what did in fact happen than David Swanson of, among other things, AfterDowningStreet.org. David is on the line with us now. David, thanks for your patience. I appreciate it, and welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. Thanks for having me on.
Well, I tell you what, I saw your follow-up about keeping our foot in the door when it came through my email this past weekend, and I really wanted to get you on for a little bit just to talk about, A, what did happen and where we go from here vis-a-vis trying to keep some level of momentum going for the idea of impeachment.
Well, you know, to some extent, when a tree falls in the woods and nobody hears it, nothing happened. And given that this media outlet and other good ones have covered what's going on, but the big, giant ones have not, or have covered it incredibly dismissively, perhaps nothing happened. But Chairman John Conyers sat for 6 hours overseeing a hearing about impeachment and heard from many of his colleagues and former Congress members and expert witnesses that there is absolutely no other choice to save our country than immediate impeachment, and that has to be good. And the independent media and the progressive media have covered it, and so the phones are ringing in Congress and the fax machines are churning and the emails are flashing, and people are telling the Judiciary Committee that we need impeachment. So that's good. I mean, this is the whole question, is whether we can transition from this sort of kind of impeachment hearing to a real impeachment hearing. And that remains to be answered.
Well, I couldn't help noticing out of what coverage I was able to see on the hearing itself, that for some reason or another, and you touched on it in your email as well, David, the business about lying us into a war, the business about the warrantless wiretapping, all of the stuff that seems like they would be slam dunk no-brainers for impeachment, didn't really grab a lot of people's fancy. Any idea why that is?
Well, both of those were discussed at great length through the 6 hours. And in fact, you have the Republican members and their chosen Republican expert witnesses very much focused on the war lies. In fact, you had one law professor, a guy named Jeremy Radkin, arguing in his opening statement that the only topic worth looking at is the war lies, because everything else pales beside that. So we should ignore all other crimes and abuses and look only at that one. But that one's a bunch of obviously wild, crazy conspiracy theories, so we should ignore that one too, and thus dismisses all abuses of power by Bush and Cheney. But what I did notice was that from a great many Democratic members, there was interest more than anything else in a couple of other charges. One is refusing to comply with requests and subpoenas and contempt citations. And another is the routine violation of numerous laws and announcing the power to do so with signing statements. I would say those two topics have the most traction in the sense of likelihood of Congress members actually moving for impeachment on those offenses. And of course, I'm saying that having publicly predicted it endlessly for years. But I think it was clearly the case, and I think it's so because fewer Congress members are complicit in those crimes. They're not controversial crimes. They are abuses of power that Republicans and Democrats in Congress alike can get behind accountability for.
And to a certain extent, is it also a little bit of the, to me, reminiscent of the idea that Al Capone got taken down for tax evasion and not murder? Is it the same sort of thing?
I've argued that as well. I mean, I think everybody understood why they went after Al Capone. He wasn't just some random guy. They went after him for his major crimes, but they got him on tax fraud because that's what they could get him on. I think if Bush and Cheney were held accountable for refusing to comply with subpoenas, absolutely everyone, more so than with Nixon, would understand that this was about the war lies. This was about the torture and the detentions and Katrina and all the rest of it. This is the least popular president and vice president since polling has been done. That's driven largely by the war. There's a growing understanding of the effect of the war on our economy at home. I mean, they are absolutely despised by the American public for the whole package of crimes and abuses and failures. And to get them on some arrogant abuse of power would communicate to the world what we were about. But for Congress to not assert that subpoenas must be complied with and contempt citations must be enforced is to simply eliminate congressional oversight from here on out. And I don't care who's president next or after them. They can do whatever they choose.
And that's what I find so disturbing, and I would think that somewhere along the way, even the right-wingers might even somehow understand that if Congress has any hope of being Congress, that this can't be let pass. With that having been said, David, what about the makeup of the House Judiciary Committee itself? Can you give a rundown of where you perceive its members to stand on this?
Well, a great many Republicans and some of the Democrats didn't bother to show up, including some Democrats who in the past have had some courage on this issue. People like Maxine Waters and Luis Gutierrez simply didn't show up. As far as who did show up, Robert Wexler, predictably and in accordance with past performance, led the charge. John Conyers let him speak first, despite him not being the senior member, and he demanded impeachment hearings immediately and nothing less. Sheila Jackson Lee spoke very well for impeachment. Hank Johnson, African-American member from Georgia, Democrat, who signed on to Cheney's impeachment but never Bush's, and so we didn't really know, spoke very well for impeachment. Tammy Baldwin, as well, spoke eloquently for impeachment and quoted my friend and her constituent, John Nichols. Keith Ellison, who pushed impeachment a couple years ago in the Minnesota state legislature, ran for Congress campaigning on impeachment and won, has finally come around to speaking up a little bit for impeachment. Maurice Hinchey, who was not on the committee but a witness, along with Dennis Kucinich as a witness, they both spoke up very well for impeachment. Hinchey said this is the most impeachable administration we've ever seen. He said administration rather than president because the rules require that sort of evasion. There were many other witnesses who spoke very well for impeachment and many other Congress members who went some distance in that direction, maybe more than we might have hoped, including Bobby Scott, Zoe Lofgren, even Gerald Nadler went right up to the edge of saying, let's have impeachment.
So with that in mind, do you feel like the ones who are wavering could be pushed or pulled toward it?
I think so. I think that people have the most influence with their own Congress member, whether they're on the committee or not. So the most useful thing is to call your Congress member every day for the next 20 days. We're down to 20 days here because then they go away for a month of summer vacation. For the next 20 days, call your Congress member at least 20 times and say, go tell John Conyers we want a real impeachment hearing. And some members will do that privately who won't do it publicly, but we'd prefer publicly. But call the Judiciary Committee members, the wavering Democrats, the people like Scott and Lofgren and Nadler as well, especially if your member is on the committee, and urge them privately and publicly to push for real impeachment hearings. And they can sign on. There's some 18 members have long since signed on to Robert Wexler's letter at wexlerwantshearings.com, letter to Conyers saying, let's have the impeachment hearings. that this is what I mean. We don't have time now to be starting new campaigns to pass a resolution in your town or state. We don't have time for elaborate three side bank shots. We have to go straight to, we need real impeachment hearings now, and we need Congress members pushing for it. And I think there is a, there is definitely an opening, definitely a chance, and there is definitely an opening also to go to your local media and say, why haven't you printed yet the AP or UPI stories from last Friday? What is the matter with you? Print those stories. Go to your local radio and TV and push for coverage. And the polling companies now no longer have the excuse that nothing's happening in Congress. So they should be polling on impeachment.
Well, if anyone has looked in detail at the timeline, David, it's got to be you. You mentioned the 20 days. What effectively, what kind of timeline are we looking at under the best of circumstances if we could have real hearings and get a real, what does it look like in an attempt to get a real bill to the floor and something sent to the Senate?
It can't take more than an hour if they had the decision to do it. I mean, if you're going to impeach on refusal to comply with subpoenas, they simply have refused to comply with subpoenas. There is no investigation or research or long committee process even conceivable. What the heck would it be? How would they do it? I mean, they simply have refused. Or if you're looking at the signing statements, they're posted on the White House website and always have been, and the Government Accountability Office studies to the effect that they are actually violating many of the laws that they claim the right to violate with the signing statements, are long since published. There's no investigation needed or possible. The violation of FISA, the president has openly confessed to it on television. So you take one of these more movable issues, and you take the evidence, which is absolutely indisputable, and you hold the hearing in an afternoon, and you're done. I mean, Bruce Fein, who's was an associate deputy attorney general under Reagan and testified on Friday, was asked by one of the committee members about this question, and he said, well, look, there would be, it wouldn't be good to bring up an impeachment and only do half of it and quit with accusations out there and no chance for a defense and so forth. But here, that's not an issue because the case is open and shut. Just do it. Now, Liz Holtzman, former congresswoman who also testified, sort of advocates two steps, you know, begin the impeachment hearings, send yet one more subpoena, have that refused, and then because it's a subpoena from an impeachment hearing, impeach for refusing to comply with that subpoena. You know, that's fine with me, but that, you know, that process could take a few days. But, you know, do it now. Do it now. We've got these 2 weeks to work with.
Okay. Then, if I understand correctly, this doesn't even reach any, I mean, on the subpoena issue, David, this doesn't even reach any issues of, say, executive privilege. It is the fact that these subpoenaed individuals simply did not show up.
Well, they assert executive privilege. They assert it in wildly unbelievable ways, counter to the law as ruled by the Supreme Court 30 years ago, that it only applies in cases of national security. They assert it in ways that have absolutely nothing to do with national security, and yet they assert it. But if it's an impeachment hearing, as Liz Holtzman argues, then executive privilege does not apply, at least in the long-standing belief of the legislative branch, which is the most important branch of our government, at least used to be when it existed. Executive privilege does not apply. So when they refuse to comply with a subpoena from an impeachment hearing, and then, as with Richard Nixon, the recourse is to impeach them for refusing to comply, because then they have no excuse whatsoever. They're simply refusing. They can't use executive privilege.
And well, that does sound like it wouldn't take much time at all. Assuming it gets past the House, is there any sort of strategizing going on in the Senate? Is anybody in the Senate thinking about this?
Oh, absolutely not. Absolutely not whatsoever. They have been promised by Nancy Pelosi that it will never happen. But should it happen, it will happen as a result of activity in the House that is absolutely all over the corporate media, no matter what they might wish. Because it will be a real impeachment and be absolutely unavoidable. And so there will be a level of awareness of what the abuses are. And senators will be asked, do you want the next president to be able to rewrite any law you pass? Or do you want the next president to be able to refuse any subpoena that might be sent from the House or the Senate? And so there will be a real possibility of conviction in the Senate. But there will have to be a trial, and that will take at least some days. But, you know, there have been past impeachment trials that took no more than a day, not of presidents, but of senators and cabinet members and justices. And, you know, there's no requirement that it be some sort of long ordeal. It could be done quite quickly, and there are impeachment movements that have happened later than this. But remember that the vast majority of impeachment movements, 90% of impeachment movements that really take hold in Congress, win what they're after without ever getting to impeachment, much less a trial, much less conviction. And this was the case with Nixon as well. He left town. No trial was needed. So we take it one step at a time.
So let me ask you, this is a little bit off the beaten path, but have you followed the story about Karl Rove now actively engaging in witness threatening? Have you seen that?
Yes. I mean, I have a lot more interest in Bush and Cheney as the people giving Karl Rove his orders.
Right.
People who set the precedent for future administrations, you know, whether they are punished or not. But Karl Rove is blatantly and egregiously criminal and is criminally refusing to comply with a subpoena and is claiming executive privilege as a former employee of the executive, working incidentally illegally in violation of the Hatch Act on political operations at our expense.
And the reason I asked is because it does it for me it sort of circles back into the executive privilege business. He can't claim privilege for any act that was can he claim privilege, or can the administration claim privilege? The privilege adheres to the administration. Can they claim privilege for acts that he took that are arguably illegal?
Certainly. They claim privilege for anything.
Okay, that was a silly question on my part. I apologize.
This is a president who has openly committed the felony of ordering former staffers not to comply with congressional subpoenas. That's obstruction of justice. We just don't think it is, because we're like the frog in the slowly heating water, letting ourselves be boiled. We've allowed this administration to make open criminality the norm in Washington, D.C., and so it doesn't shock us anymore. We don't question it, and yet this is open and blatant criminality.
What happens to George Bush's pardon power if we succeed with impeachment? Or if we succeed in getting a bill passed in the House, I should say.
I have heard a rather widespread rumor that if an impeachment is at all underway, the president cannot pardon anyone. I don't have any idea where that comes from. I've never seen a serious source for it. I may simply be uninformed, but people much wiser than I, whom I've asked, also know nothing about that whatsoever. The Constitution says that the president can pardon anybody, if anything, but he cannot pardon impeachment. That is to say, if Alberto Gonzalez had been impeached, the president could not undo that. That impeachment stands, and that Senate conviction would stand. And the president cannot pardon Dick Cheney of...
In point of fact, impeachment is a standalone procedure, is it not, David? It's not even appealable to the Supreme Court.
No. In fact, the Supreme Court justices can themselves be impeached. Impeachment is the power that the founders of this nation put in the hands of the people, the sovereigns of this nation, through our representatives in the House of Representatives, as the key instrument for holding in check either the judicial or the executive branches. And so, of course, the president can do nothing to overturn or to stall an impeachment or an impeachment trial of himself or anyone else, because this is the power of the legislative branch to hold him in check.
So we've got 20 days to work with. Are you also asking people? Well, I mean, you're also suggesting, you know, beyond the House Judiciary Committee, just to be clear, that garden variety run-of-the-mill members of the House of Representatives that they receive demands from their constituents to get on board with the movement. Correct?
Yes, absolutely. And anybody can call their Congress member, even if they don't know who he or she is, at 202-224-3121. 202-224-3121. Tell them who your member is or where you live, what's your zip code, and they will connect you to your member or their staff and ask them to sign on to Kucinich's resolutions for impeachment, to introduce their own resolution, simply saying, let's have impeachment hearings, to sign on to Wexler's letter to Conyers, or to simply urge John Conyers, privately or publicly, to move on impeachment, or urge Nancy Pelosi to tell him he can do so. You know, it was Nancy Pelosi who made the decision to hold this hearing on Friday. It was not John Conyers. He's obeying orders for whatever reason. But absolutely, you have the most influence with your Congress member and with your local media. So those are the places to start.
And that brings me to the final question about the your perception of the current dynamic between Conyers and Pelosi. Your thoughts, please.
Well, I'm not privileged to any inside communications. I know that it was Nancy Pelosi's decision who told John Conyers to do this, and he eventually did it. And he did it in a way that was somewhat watered down and in accordance with ideas he'd been floating around behind closed doors for many months. And I'm certain was done in a way that Nancy Pelosi found acceptable. Now, he has always refused to publicly blame Nancy Pelosi and insisted that it's his decision and not hers. But, you know, he clearly is either obeying Nancy Pelosi or agrees with everything she says, which is something that he and his staff, when I used to work closely with them 3 years ago, never would have done. So my guess is that he's obeying Nancy Pelosi. Now, there is the distinct possibility, and I realize it sounds crazy and paranoid, that he is also obeying the Bush administration. I mean, we know that they have spied illegally on Congress members and senators. This is what this illegal spying is about and nothing else. This is why we needed the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act when it was first put into place. There is no question that they are attempting to spy on their political opponents. Now, what, if anything, they have on John Conyers, I don't know.
Well, that's but it's well worth the mention because you're so right. We do know. Again, we're not talking about gray area stuff. They have used. Well, I'm sure that in 2004 they knew every time that John Kerry went to the bathroom, for heaven's sakes. And
I wouldn't. It's entirely possible. It's even likely that they did, and that they know similar things now about their political opponents.
Well, the thing with I couldn't help but just sort of look a little askance when the thing with John Edwards recently came up. Whether it turns out to be true or not, you know, there's got to be a little dime dropping going on there somewhere. People can keep up with your efforts and efforts to move toward impeachment at which website best, David? AfterDowningStreet.org?
That's a good one, yeah. AfterDowningStreet.org, and right in the top middle, it'll let you know what's going on and how you can help out. And, you know, we really should put all the pressure we can in the next 20 days before they take summer break. Now, Kucinich says they shouldn't take any summer break and should push ahead with impeachment, but he's got 434 others to convince.
That's a tall order, even for a man that works as hard as he does. Well, I thank you for your patience this evening. Like I said, I apologize for getting to you a little bit late, David. But I don't know how you fit so much into any given 24-hour day, because I see you out there working, and I know from the press releases and so forth how hard you do work on this. Do you want folks just to bug their congressman? Do you need help yourself? I mean, how can we best mobilize our efforts to coordinate with what you've already got going?
Call your congressmember, email your congressmember, fax your congressmember, go to their office, get your neighbors and friends to do the same, and to get their neighbors and friends to do the same. Contact your local media. Say, look, there are wire service stories from a huge event on Friday in Washington. Why don't you print one of them tomorrow? Why don't you do an article on impeachment? Why don't you print an op-ed on impeachment? We can write one for you. Call talk shows like this one and others. Call, email the media, phone the media, fax the media. Call the major national media outlets as well as the local ones and demand coverage of impeachment. Let them know how high the ratings would be if they would cover impeachment, that it's in their financial interest. Back pro-impeachment congressional candidates, starting with Cindy Sheehan, who is now on the ballot against Nancy Pelosi.
She did qualify then.
Well, she has collected enough signatures to qualify. Now, they will always find some percentage of the signatures to be no good and throw them out, so you have to keep collecting more till you have well over the number you need. But she is doing so and is widely expected to have enough, regardless, to be on the ballot. If you go to afterdowningstreet.org, there's a link near the upper right to pro-impeachment candidates, many of whom are having a huge impact on the incumbents they are challenging. Certainly, Cindy's effort is part of why Pelosi did what she did last Friday. So give them your time, your work, your support, your money, but don't just give them your money. Photocopy the check before you mail it and send the photocopy to the media and to the incumbents you're not giving money to and say you're not getting this because you're not backing impeachment. Push in all of these different ways and do a little freeway blogging. Make a giant sign that says impeach and put it where a lot of cars and trucks are going to see it. It's a lot of fun, and it reaches as many people as some of these lousy cable television news shows.
Well, that's very true. David Swanson, thank you very, very much. I do appreciate it.
Thank you for everything.
Well, I'm looking forward to an update with good news maybe here in about 10, 15 days.
Sounds good.
All right, take care now.
Bye-bye.
Bye. David Swanson, afterdowningstreet.org. You can follow impeachment there. Just bookmark it, favorite it, do whatever you do. Go there, have a look every day to see where impeachment stands. And, you know, don't assume that just because you've got some blue dog sitting in your congressional district that it's a wasted effort. The only effort that is wasted is the effort that is not made. I have written letter after letter after letter to Nick Rahal. And you know what? I'm going to keep doing it. He can ignore me. But I can also leave his ballot space blank come November. I mean, it cuts both ways. You know, money? Sure. The photocopy of the check? I love the photocopy of the check idea. So, do this. It costs you nothing. It costs you maybe the price of a long-distance phone call if long-distance phone calls are still tolled on your account. But it won't take but a couple of minutes, all right? It's not terribly expensive. Even on long distance tolls, what you would spend on this doing it every day for 20 days probably doesn't add up to a night at McDonald's. Okay? So, you know, there you have it. It is about 16 minutes and change before the hour. And I want you to have the opportunity to bring anything to the table that you want to, whether it's what happened in Knoxville, whether it is impeachment. And look, you may think me crazy. I don't see a heck of a lot of distance between what happened in Knoxville and the fact that we don't hold, frankly, a felonious president and vice president, a felonious administration to account. There isn't a lot of distance between the two. Because here's a homicidal maniac, not crazy, but a maniac, made into a maniac by the right-wing machine, who goes in and shoots up a church in Knoxville, Tennessee, all right? Meanwhile, you've got the same people filling his mind with filth that have done everything in their power to carry water for this administration and convince this country My God, Limbaugh out there saying that selling Club Gitmo T-shirts. All right. Savage out there talking about how Bush isn't conservative and hateful enough. There's a unity to this stuff. It's like some sort of political unified field theory. Only this one is a lot easier to pull together than, say, the unified field theory in physics, if that's what they're still calling it. It's all part of a piece, because it's all stuff that is engendered, encouraged, and acted upon by thugs. Thugs is thugs is thugs is thugs. And that's what we're looking at here. So, you may not see the connection. Maybe I didn't make the connection clear enough. But I do. Or maybe I'm just turning into that guy from A Beautiful Mind who's finding secret messages in highlights for children. That's how, and the Reader's Digest and the TV Guide and stuff. No. This stuff is all strung together. It's all strung together in stories coming out, that the $40 million we spent partially building a prison in Iraq. Well, the thing's a pile of bricks now, and it's utterly useless. Can't ever be a prison. Doesn't matter what they do to it. It won't ever be anything. And it's just $40 million of yours gone. Down the Iraqi rat hole. Not that Iraq is a rat hole. Not that the Iraqi people are rats. No, no, no. Stop that. But the rat hole that is the Iraq war. Bless his little Australian heart. I don't know if you saw this or not. Word warning, if mom, dad, if little Timmy and little Susie are in the room, you might want to run them out real quick. That or assume that they've probably heard this word somewhere else. You gotta love the plain-spokenness of an Australian. It's a beautiful thing. Talking about the war, the Iraq occupation, all of that. The assistant to Condoleezza Rice, who also he's also authored a counterinsurgency manual. The guy's name, he's a former Australian Army officer named David Kilcullen. He helped General David Petraeus design the 2007 counterinsurgency strategy in Iraq. Like I said, he's now an advisor to Condoleezza Rice, goes great with Condoleezza Chicken. Gave an interview to Spencer Ackerman about his upcoming handbook on counterinsurgency for senior policymakers. And he said he told Ackerman that they should, those senior policymakers should, and I quote, think very, very carefully before intervening in other countries. In speaking about Iraq, he said the following, according to Ackerman. More bluntly, Kilcullen, who helped Petraeus design his 2007 counterinsurgency strategy in Iraq, called the decision to invade Iraq stupid. In fact, he said, fecking stupid. And suggested that if policymakers apply the manual's lessons, similar wars can be avoided in the future. The biggest stupid idea, Kilcullen said, was to invade Iraq in the first place. At least somebody out in the rest of, from the rest of the world is talking plain common sense English. And I said that word right here on the intertubes because we can actually do journalism here on the intertubes and say what the person said regardless of what the words were. Can't do that on Buggy Whip Radio. you know, censored FCC-controlled radio. See, that's a real quote. It's not said for it's not said for shock value. It's not said for prurient purposes. It's not said for any purpose of titillation. Gotta wonder how long this guy will have his job now that he's said that. But you know what? It is fucking stupid. Iraq, you knew it, I knew it, we all knew it, was precisely that stupid. And yeah, Iraq, the crime that is the war against and occupation of Iraq, was fucking stupid. Just is. Still is. $40 million. Kind of hard to get your for a prison. This was supposed to be the prison that was going to replace Abu Ghraib. It ain't going to replace nothing now. Of course, I'm. It goes without saying. But just trying to get your head around $40 million. You know, we're spending, what, $10 billion a week on the throwing down the Iraq rat hole? And you can't get your head around $10 billion. I mean, if you think about hitting the Powerball or whatever lottery you tend to play or not play, if you think about hitting that and winning, say, $200 million, when you play that little fantasy game with it and you start thinking about what you're going to spend the money on, and come on, if you've ever bought the ticket, you know you've thought about it. At you know, $10 million, you start wondering what else to do with the money. $10 million. If you're like me, you're absolutely challenged. Just to try to put some sort of relationship together with a number of that magnitude. You know, but you can figure out what $1 million means. You can sit there and look at what you make and wonder how long it would take you to make $1 million. You can take $1 million and figure out what one 25th of a baseball season is, 162 games, and figure out how long it takes Alex Rodriguez to make $1 million. Businesses, it's not unusual for a business, or even a small business, to do $1 million worth of business in a year. And you can measure that in what kind of sales you've got to have on a daily basis to come up with that, either as a gross or a net. That you can do. And any way you slice it, it's a whole bunch of labor. It is a ton of work and sweat and worry and long hours. Now multiply that by 40. And you've got a pile of bricks with the blowing sand piled up against it somewhere in the arid, deserted wilds of Iraq. And you know that while that $40 million, I mean, you can go look at the pictures. I mean, I got it via a link to MSNBC.com. You can go look at the pictures. You can see the picture of this place. And you know what? I'm looking at it. I'm not seeing $40 million. It's nowhere near completed. It's the Khan Bani Saad Correctional Facility about 12 miles northeast of Baghdad. It's part of a report that has come out on waste, fraud, and abuse in the so-called reconstruction of Iraq. Stuart Bowen is the Special Inspector General for Iraq Reconstruction. His report was released today. And it's just a catalog of what ain't right with this stupid little prison. And Stuart Bowen says, it's a bit of a monument in the desert right now because it's not going to be used as a prison. This is a $40 million investment in a project with very little return. A couple of buildings are useful. Other than that, it's a failure. Out of $21 billion spent in the Iraq Relief and Reconstruction Fund, Bowen says that about up to 20% of that is waste. More than $4 billion. Remember how we couldn't get our heads around $40 million? Multiply that by 100. $4 billion of the Iraq Reconstruction Fund is just waste. It's just gone. It's as if you were sitting there the lighting cigarettes with billion-dollar bills. And that's $4 billion out of the Iraq Reconstruction Fund. That doesn't even get to the $9 billion that the Coalition Provisional Authority had fall out of its pockets in the sofa there in the CPA office in Baghdad. I think it was our buddy David in Tennessee, calculated that in truckloads one time, and it was 18 semi-tractor trailer truckloads of $100 bills, $9 billion. So the $4 billion gone from the Reconstruction Fund, that's eight and a half truckloads of $100 bills shrink-wrapped on pallets. 9 semi-tractor trailer loads. But you know what? There's also something else at work here, and I'm going to go to the phone in a sec. There's also something else here. And it's in this this little snippet, this little paragraph from the Associated Press report. It says the following. The empty prison compound, in the shadows of more than 24 watchtowers now dotted by birds' nests, is an open sore for both American watchdogs and local Iraqi politicians who had counted on the prison as an economic boost. Well, well, well. It looks like we really have exported American economic theory to Iraq. The same mindset that has created 1 in 100 incarcerated persons in this country. 1% of the population is in jail in America right now and has done so under the rubric of privatized prisons and T. Don Hutto or Don T. Hutto correctional facilities in Texas being used as concentration camps that have little immigrant children in it. The commercialization of our punishment fetish in this country has been exported to Iraq. Now imagine that. There you are, you're an American, you're working in Iraq, and you go to the local sheikhs and you say, hey, buddy, we're gonna lift this region up out of economic misery. We're bringing you a prison! And the sheikh looks at you and says, what? Oh yeah, prisons are big business back home in America. And it'll be big prison, it'll be big, big business here. And they bought into it. They fell for it. The head of the municipal council in Khan Bani Saad, Syed Rasul al-Husseini, called it, quote, a big monster that swallowed money and hopes, including hopes for more than 1,200 new jobs. He says he sometimes goes on out to the site, and he said he walks the perimeter of the prison that will never be anything now. And he wonders what can be salvaged out of it. He says it can't be a housing development. among other things, this prison, this ultra-modern prison that the Bush administration was going to build in Iraq, it doesn't even have reinforced concrete walls. Now, you've seen concrete poured. You know the rebar that goes in it. There's no rebar in these concrete walls, and they're prone to collapse at any time. And yeah, this was all cooked up by the Coalition Provisional Authority and Presidential Medal of Freedom winner, L. Paul Bremer. Jeez. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers gave a $40 million contract in March 2004 to global construction and engineering firm Parsons to design and build an 1,800 inmate lockup, including educational and vocational facilities. Work was set to begin May 2004 and finish November 2005. It ain't done. Ain't ever gonna be finished. But Parsons has a big old wad of cash in its pocket that it ain't gonna give back without a fight. Yeah. 1,800 inmate lockup. Oh. Because prisons is good business. You know, prisons is where Lindy England learned how to put people on a leash and point at them with a cigarette hanging off her lip. She learned that right over there in Maryland. Really, she did. So, you know, it's just another stinking ripoff. What are you going to do? Hey, welcome to the program.
Welcome back.
Hey, thanks, David.
Yeah, that sounds to me like an MGM jail. An MGM studio prop jail. Just build it out there and say no one will question anything and take the money and spend it on whatever.
Yeah. I mean, you should see the photograph of this. I mean, there's block and brick piled up all over the place. No windows where the windows would be. I mean, nothing.
You see, you try to explain this to someone, and they're going to come back and say, well, it's not as bad as welfare. It's not as bad as the waste of money in Social Security, and that's the...
But dang, it is as bad. It's worse. It is welfare.
I know. It doesn't matter, though, what you say on that, because they're going to come up with irrational numbers. They don't understand the consequences of corruption. They don't understand the consequences of unaccountability. I've had this talk with who I consider a really, really intelligent person, and he said to me, when I brought up the trial, he said when I played him the Vincent Bugliosi intro, he said that sounds like that guy has an axe to grind. And all I could say back was, everyone in politics has an axe to grind.
Sure.
But see, this is the immediate reaction that I got. And then he said to me, I said this concerns the Bill of Rights and Constitution. And then he said to me, well, it's been eroding since the 1800s. We can't really blame it on this administration. So, I mean, that's the kind of things that we're dealing with.
Blame shmame. I don't want to have George Bush march through the streets and have people throwing rotten tomatoes at him or anything.
Yeah.
But I'd like
want him in prison.
Well, no. You know what? I'd like to get the $40 million back on this stupid prison.
Yeah. That's going to require a will of the people, and unfortunately, they're at the Walmart supermarket.
Yeah.
And they're just buying consume good after consume good, and then realizing they just get the talking points from the national media, and then say, well, welfare is a waste, and that's nothing new. Politicians have been corrupt, and they just shrug their shoulders and they keep shopping. That's pretty much how I see it.
Wow. Check it out. I'm just looking at a few more of the details because, you know, at some point in time, somebody that has to balance a checkbook every month, David, has got to have some of this resonate with them. I know the numbers are big, and I know they're just incomprehensible almost. But this Parsons outfit, this Parsons Construction,
mm-hmm.
they were let 53 construction projects. They completed only 18. Okay. And here's the fun part. They don't actually build anything. They sub it all out. This is astonishing. They were paid, as of this spring, $333 million, David. $142 million, almost 43% of that, went for projects that were terminated or canceled. But they don't give the money back.
And therein lies the problem, the fact that no one understands of how eventually, sooner or later, a hammer will come down on corruption, on corrupting forces, and it'll be either a overpowering, aggressive hammer, or it's going to just be a little light hit, sort of. I think that the problem that we have in this country is the fact that there is no explaining this kind of situation in a single sit-down conversation, which is why I think we should have town hall meetings on TV, and I can see why we don't. Instead of listening to pundits who can't even relate to any of us in this country, they've completely been isolated from what being real is, and nor do they want to experience it. But that's the problem that I see. That's the problem that my dad sees explaining it to people. They don't understand that there is a wall somewhere when it comes to how much we can be in debt. They just think it goes on forever.
So what? It's reached the point where it's like the weather. Can't do anything about it. Why are we talking about it?
Well, it's like what is it? Patton Oswalt. He said, "It's like I feel like we've reached this point in this country where we're falling. We've fallen so much." I just began to think, well, maybe there isn't a bottom. Shoot, I just ride my way down. Yahoo!
You know what? You just picked out the bumper for after we're done here.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because I got exact. You know my proclivity for picking out a DBT song. Yeah, Gravity's Gone.
Well,
one of my favorites.
Go.
I've been falling so long that it's like gravity's gone and I'm just floating.
I got before I go, I got a show recommendation for you. I just found out about it watching documentaries on Adventures of Young Indiana Jones, which I recommend everybody rent the whole series. I'm in the middle of it. It's about 39 discs.
Wasn't that from like several years back or?
But here's the amazing thing about it.
Well, no, I watched some of it several years back. I want to make sure that we're talking about the same thing.
Yeah, we're talking about the same thing, but here's the amazing thing about it. The extras on it, I've never seen extras like this in my life. It's like documentary after documentary on every historical period at that time. So you have stuff on Tolstoy, you have stuff on Aristotle. They're like in 40-minute documentaries each, and they really would, Lucas put these together, I mean, amazingly well. They must have worked on these for like 2 or 3 freaking years, the way they edited it together and the interviews that they've had. But anyways, during one of the ones in philosophy, they brought up a show that I've never heard of, and it's on KALW.org. It's called Philosophy Talk. Have you heard of this show?
No.
This show has Kenneth David and another professor, and what they do, Bob, is for an hour, they cover a topic. So what they'll do is they'll cover a topic like someone will bring up a question like, would you want to live forever? And then they debate it philosophically for an hour. So if you guys go to KLW.org, I think it's on Saturdays. I believe it's on at 10 a.m. Maybe it's on go to KLW.org. You can check out Philosophy Talk. And the picture they showed me, I'm stoned on it. I was like, this is amazing. I'm glad they showed this to me.
Cool.
think you'll be really impressed by it, Bob, and I wouldn't be surprised if you had these two as guests, because they're phenomenal, what they do. Phenomenal.
KALW.org?
Yeah, you'll see their schedule, where they broadcast. It just so happens they don't broadcast on the, I don't think NPR's picked it up completely. It's somewhere in the southwest and midwest area in California. But what's really amazing is the fact that they let the callers come in and they talk about this subject, whatever the subject is. And I guess they've been doing this show for years. So there's an idea for you, Bob. You check out the show, and you might want to have these guys as guests. Because,
yeah.
Wow, I was just knocked out. The fact
maybe a Wednesday, perfect for a Wednesday evening.
Yeah, perfect for a Wednesday evening. I don't know, but I think it's good. I think it would be good for subjects like with the shooter that we had just now, to talk this one through. Because my point is on the shooter is what he did was wrong, and he was listening to right-wing radio, and he probably was indoctrinated. But by me saying that, and by me coming out with that, it just kind of reinforces my stereotypes of like, okay, what would happen? Would I react the same way if this happened along the lines of a left wing? And I think a lot of people would tend to not act the same way. And that's part of the problem I have with this. So you understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
Yeah, so I don't know how to come down on this. I do know that, you know, people need to be accountable. If I was on the radio, I would seriously think there should be some kind of critical thinking, kind of dialogue or discussion, kind of like when someone has a in the urban communities with police brutality, they'll do a special on it or something. You know, if it's theater, it's theater. But, you know, make an effort at least. Otherwise, that's just sad, and you're just faking it all the way. I mean, I would just like to see, you know, just some kind of open dialogue with no rigmarole type thing. But, you know, I don't think we're going to get that. But with that said, one more thing.
Sure.
I just saw the trailer to W.
Oh, I did too.
You saw that?
I saw that.
And I also saw this, which I think I was a skeptic, and now I'm a believer. I'm a believer, Bob. Tron 2. Holy shit.
Oh no, I didn't know that. I didn't even know there was another Tron coming.
Yeah, there's another
Yeah,
Tron
I'll coming. I'll be all over that.
Jeff Bridges is in it. What they did was brilliant. I don't know if the studios did this, probably not, because they're pulling the video down. But then again, I can't tell because I'm skeptical at how this guerrilla marketing works. But there's a video at Comic-Con where someone had a camera and they did the trailer at the at the convention, and the scene that they showed, every frame that they picked, it's just, that's the way you sell a movie. It was light cycles going down the road. The way they made the light cycle is amazing, Bob. It's just, wow. If they keep it up on this, I mean, people are just going to be like wowed all over again. And they'll make Tron 1 look like Mickey Mouse. Really amazing.
Cool. Well, if it's still there, I'll go and look for it because I'm a sucker.
Oh, by the way, did you get that link that I sent to you for Circus Money?
Yeah, I did, and it's good.
Yeah, that's cool.
It's good.
For those people who didn't catch that link, that's KLW.org, Philosophy Talk, and I recommend it from what I've heard. I'm going to be checking in this Saturday.
All right. Well, take it easy, David.
All right, Bob. Later.
Thanks for the heads up. Bye.
No problem.
Pop culture correspondent David calling from Maine. And it's time for a little break, and yeah, I gave away the bumper. But you know what? That's perfect. It just works perfect. Gravity's Gone from the Truckers. This is The Horn. We'll be right back.
Thank you. Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Bob.
Oh, I got a great email here. Our buddy Fancy Free from the chat room, otherwise known as Jay, says, as I listen to the discussion of the defaults by contractors in Iraq, I find I'm thinking about Mel Brooks' The Producers. It was a beautiful plan. Collect funds from backers, produce a flop, and keep the money. Could there be a laugh-filled musical in the future about contractors in Iraq? Hugs, Jay. You know, that was the... We got another one to add to the list. You know, our ongoing list of books and movies that someone in the Bush administration saw and completely misunderstood. Catch-22... Dr. Strangelove, The Producers. Hey, we'll produce a flop in Iraq. We'll collect all the money, but it'll really be a flop. That's the good part. It'll be a flop. It'll suck. It'll stink. It'll be the worst attempt at war the United States has ever waged, and we'll all get rich. Well, I mean, you know, not you, not me, but the hummingbird tongue canape crowd. Yeah. They'll all get rich. David mentioned a couple of minutes ago this trailer for W, the movie. Oh, I know, you think I'm kidding. No, it's an Oliver Stone movie. And there's a line in it that just sort of rubbed me the wrong way. Let me see if I can find that real quick. I'm not going to run the trailer, but the particular line. And it is, it's the scene where, George Sr., you know, Poppy, is lecturing ne'er-do-well W. And the quote is, I don't know if I can find it. Had it here a minute ago. Doggone, has it gone away already? How did I possibly... No. But it's something like... No, I know it's here. First of all, you know, the actors for this thing are pretty solid. But it... Oh, where'd it go? Doggone it, I hate it when this happens to me. Well, shoot. But it's, what are you good for? Drinking? Boozing? Drugs? Fooling around? You're not a Kennedy, you're a Bush! Please. Please. Oh, by the way, just as a quick follow-up, right-wing reaction to the Knoxville shooting. A commenter over at Michelle Malkin's website. You know what I think? He didn't hate liberals. He hated Christians. He wanted to leave the impression that he is a conservative who hates liberals, however, to discredit conservatives. Evil. Wow! Now bear in mind, as John Amato points out over at Crooks and Liars, Michelle Malkin is a very close screener of the people that she allows to comment on her website. In other words, this guy's writing had her approval. And it's tough to get your head around, I admit. You know what I think? He didn't hate liberals. He hated Christians.
He wanted to leave the impression that he is a conservative who hates liberals, however, to discredit conservatives. Evil. You know what? That sounds absolutely crazier than a sprayed roach. And you can, therefore, guarantee that it will become one of the talking points for the repigs not taking ownership of this tragedy that they have created. So I guess in this paranoid freak's mind, the guy went out and bought all those right-wing hate books and scattered them conveniently around his apartment just to confuse people and make them think he was conservative. Mama. Lordy, you can't make that up. Bialy Stock and Bloom. What would we call it? Well, Jay, what would we call that movie? The Contractors, not the producers. The Contractors. I think this thing's going to write itself. We could have a hit on our hands. Lordy. Some of this stuff all makes too much sense to me sometimes, and it just scares the daylights out of me when it does. Let's go to the phones. Hi, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing, Bob?
Hey, Gary, how are you?
Hey, doing good, doing good. How you doing?
I'm all right. Nice to be back in the chair on a normal week. After, you know, running around and having schedules all messed up last week and stuff, it's good to be back in the regular chair.
It seems the old chickens have come home to roost. I was thinking about something today when I was reading about this story about the guy. You know, you remember when Obama got caught so much hell during the primaries when he said about the bitter comment. You know, he said that they...
And they cleaned the guns and religion?
They cleaned the guns and the religion. They had, you know, basically a little bit of hatred toward people who aren't like them. You know, and it really kind of goes to kind of show you. Now, he caught all kind of hell for that. But, you know, here's a classic case of it, you know.
Yeah, he didn't catch any hell from me on that one because he was right.
I'm sorry?
I said he didn't catch any hell from me on that one because he was absolutely right.
No, but I'm saying the right.
The right wing had an absolute hissy.
Oh,
but
how can you say that? He's just disrespecting us. It's just like, it's like, no, he's telling everybody what's going on, you know, and they keep running around, oh, Obama's like some prophet. I'm like, Obama's no prophet. He's just saying everything that you hear from the left most of the time when he's not moving to the center. But the bottom line is he's just saying a lot of things that, you know, you've been talking about for years in the radio, you know. All the stuff now is just raising his head, and he was obviously smart enough, you know, and I think the country's starting to realize that this point of view that we've been talking about for years is really not something, some great revelation. It's just what America, you know, way things really are. We need to really be honest and look in the mirror and say, you know, we're not that pretty as a country in some spots, you know.
No, we're downright scary as a country. And that's, you know, that's why we can't have a legitimate discussion about guys like this Adkison guy in Knoxville. We can't have an honest discussion about him, Gary.
Well, they're going to cover it up, you know.
Yeah.
You know, the media's going to cover it up. You know, I don't know if you probably know about this, but you had some major bombings in Baghdad today.
Right.
I haven't seen any of that on the news media.
No, that's not, no. What, 57 were killed today, the worst single day of violence in months?
Three female suicide bombers. Baghdad, okay, capital.
Yeah, and we don't know anything about those women, Gary. And a little bit of journalism might actually be beneficial. How are we to know that those aren't a couple of women whose mamas were blown up, say, in a Tomahawk cruise missile attack that landed on their house? You know, it becomes a very different dynamic if it's something like that, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
But, you know, the so-called professional journalists, nah, they're not, no. It's not worth looking into. Just like it won't be looking into this guy in Knoxville's, it won't be worth looking into his voting patterns. But you know what? His voting patterns will say a lot more about it than, say, you know, the fact that he was a mechanical engineer.
Yeah. Well, I think the fact that he didn't really kill himself may give the story a little bit of a little bit more legs. Because usually when something like this happens, when he's right-wingers or, you know, basically he's a terrorist, really, in my opinion. Domestic terrorists happen, and particularly if he comes from a right-wing point of view, they usually will cover it up if he kills himself. But I think the fact that he stayed alive, it may, maybe it'll get catch. I know it's not catching today, but maybe tomorrow or next day or two, it'll really start to catch. And that's, you know, I'm not hoping that it catches in the bad light, but I'm hoping that it catches in terms of, you know, bringing that issue to the table, that there's a lot of hate out there. And that people like Savage and some of these guys, they really need to be dialed back or removed off the air. You know, it's just, you know, we can't have this kind of hate, you know. You know, it's really crazy.
You'd like to think that something like that could happen, Gary, but, you know, when $20 or $30 million a year are at stake, they will continue to pay the Savage Wiener to be as hateful as he is to keep that money coming in, because that money is not worth a couple of people's lives inside a Unitarian church in Knoxville. That's a trade that the corporate advertising gurus are more than happy to pay as long as it doesn't touch them.
Just like the Iraq War, I mean, if they thought they could pull it off, they would, you know, kill a few thousand. You know, they didn't. They never thought it would be this bad, probably. But yeah, they would take that. Well, if we can get that oil, you know, we kill 10,000-20,000 Iraqis and leave maybe, let's say, 300 or 400 soldiers, because that's probably where they were when they drew everything up. That's what Rumsfeld's people were probably saying. And now it's like, and I don't mean to laugh in terms of at the death and the catastrophe of it, but it's just laugh at the stupidness. Of, you know what I mean? It's just, that's what you kind of laugh at, just how dumb these people are. You know, it's just the moral code that they have is just so low that it's almost like probably an animal has a higher moral code than some of these people. You know, it's really crazy. And the other thing, like you're saying, is that, you know, I was talking to somebody about this the other day, I was talking about rap music, and I was telling them about how rap music back when it first came out was more, you know, friendly, da da da. And I said, you know, in the late 80s, turned into gangster rap, and what was happening was they didn't know how to monetize hate through gangster music. And that's really what you're saying in the news media and everything else.
That's a great phrase, monetizing hate. That's beautiful.
That's what they are. They're monetizing hate. That's what it is. I mean, you look at the rap music, they're monetizing, you know, like the hatred of women, the hatred of you know, of each other. Well, back then it was East Coast, West Coast.
Right.
You know, but now it's like when you look at, you know, you look at these guys, Savage, they're just monetizing it, man, and they're making money. I mean, look at, what's her name? She's the greatest example of it. She's probably the poster child. Yeah, what's the blonde, that blonde chick? You know what I'm talking about. One that kind of looks like a guy.
Ann Coulter?
Ann Coulter. She is the perfect example of somebody who monetized hate with those books. I mean, those books are just nothing but hate.
Yeah, the three books that they found on the first go-through of the apartment, Gary, that's just the first go-through. I'd be willing to bet there's a Coulter book in there. I'd be willing to bet there's a Limbaugh book in there. This guy was thoroughly indoctrinated into right-wing hate.
Yeah.
And for every, I'm sure they weren't given to him as gifts. Somewhere along the way, somebody paid money for him. So thank you for making that connection, Gary. There is money rattling around in Limbaugh's and Savage's and O'Reilly's and Hannity's pockets that has the blood of those churchgoers in Knoxville all over it. It's soaked with it. And if there was any of that sort of ancient Greek tragedy sort of justice involved, neither Savage nor Hannity nor O'Reilly would ever sleep for the rest of their lives for being haunted by the ghosts of those poor people from Knoxville.
Do you think that they would even have some self-reflection and say, hey, you know what, maybe, you know, I should step down from this, or, you know?
No, they're psychopaths. When you're talking about a Limbaugh or a Hannity or a Savage or an O'Reilly, you're talking about people, and I feel comfortable saying this, because I think the horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner would back me up on this. We're talking about psychopaths and sociopaths. We're talking about people whose brains are so deficient as to be incapable of experiencing regret or guilt or remorse or generally having a conscience.
Yeah, I think Bush is definitely there.
Yeah, all that, sure, sure.
You know, and McCain, unfortunately, it seems like he's you know, I think he's kind of pulling all the way over there. So, I mean, maybe he's always been that way, but he seems to be kind of pulling that way himself.
So, well, I think when you get taken up onto that high mountain and the devil says, "Lo, I give you all the kingdoms you see before you," when that happens, Gary, if you make the deal, the conscience goes. I mean, you cannot be Flush Flimball and be making $40 million a year and have a conscience. That's why he occupies a 24,000 square foot mansion with nothing but a cat.
Yeah, who wants to get near him?
Well, yeah, right. No, but no, you know, that's why he's finished off the third marriage or something, because sooner or later these women figure out that he is a sociopath. That there's no soul there. And the same thing happens with Hannity, and you know, we know what O'Reilly thinks of women. You know, he wants to assault them in a shower with Middle Eastern snack food. Falafel.
I always thought that O'Reilly was just pretty much just an egomaniac just gone crazy. It's not so much a sociopath. With Sean Hannity, I can't really figure out what his problem is. Because on some level, it seems like he has some conscience. But then when you really listen to him and watch him and he talks, it becomes very clear that he's gone off the deep end too, you know? Like I don't know if he's just so partisan that he's just totally blinded by it. Let's say, you know, they got this, you know, the whole idea is the end justifies the means. I can lie and screw somebody over if I believe what I'm trying to do, you know, do is good, which is always a trap of any leader. That's what power does to you. You think you're actually doing good when you start out, and you try to justify all these ill things you have to do to get to that point where you think you're going to help people. By the time you get to that hill, you're totally compromised at that point. You're not even that same person anymore. And, that's what I'm seeing. It's this transformation, or maybe like John McCain always been that way, but it's clear to me the comments he's been making the last couple of weeks about Obama. The guy's getting nastier and nastier and nastier.
Well, maybe I took it a little far further than it should have gone, but when I saw that comment from Friday where McCain accused Obama of dancing in the end zone, to me that had racial overtones that just wouldn't quit. Saying that you know, that he was, because he had formed an exploration committee to start working on putting together a transition team in case he wins in November, McCain came out and said, well, he's dancing in the end zone.
I think what's happening with McCain, this is my own personal quick analysis of him, is that, because I've seen this with people I know who's older and who's probably getting near to their time to move on, is that he's probably looking at Obama. His whole threshold in his whole life is probably now being defined by becoming president. And he's probably putting his whole life meaning on becoming the president. Now he's looking at Obama as the guy who's going to thwart that. And I think Hillary kind of fell into this a little bit too, but, you know, the Clintons are good people, I believe. I think with McCain, I think he's always been this kind of nasty guy anyway. And I think now that's what we're seeing. We're seeing a guy who's probably on the edge realizes he's not going to get the presidency. And he's just become a very bitter person. As opposed to, you know, stepping away gracefully. And I think he's going to get real nasty before this thing is all over with.
Oh, it already is, Gary. It's getting nastier by the day.
Yeah. I mean, I'm talking about a level that we may have not seen before. You probably have seen it. I have not.
No. Well, I mean, we're headed for Willie Hortonville is where we're headed.
Yeah.
If you
hear N-word somewhere.
Well, look, I mean, we've already seen it. I mean, there's the guy selling the Curious George T-shirt in Marietta, Georgia. There's the Obama monkey sock puppet doll that was for sale online. There's the button that was for sale at the Republican state convention in Texas that said, if Obama wins, is it still the White House? And that's all, frankly, Gary, that's all nastier than I've ever experienced before. And so the march through the swamp that they've got planned for us, starting with the Republican National Convention in Minneapolis, St. Paul, I mean, if they put the Purple Heart Band-Aids on for John Kerry, what I expect to see Republicans in blackface in Minneapolis.
Well, I think do they really understand the political winds of this? I mean, really, are they going to understand that going there this time is going to actually be the worst thing they could do? Because there definitely is a shift in the wind. And it's clear that, to me, that's not going to work. To me, I think the best way they're going to do it is by using some other kind of technique. But I think playing a race card is just not going to, it's not going to do it for them this time. They need to find something else. That maybe the experience thing, or somebody, him messing around or something, or maybe, I think personally, stealing it in the polls, or, I mean, in the voting booth. But I don't think playing the race card is going to be enough. I think that's the Republicans, and matter of fact, I think they're going to a strategy. I've been looking at some ads. Even the ads, if you notice, Bob, they look like they're just ads from like the 90s and 80s. They look just totally out of date. It's like I've seen those ads before. And when I've seen something before so much, it doesn't have the same impact. You know what I mean? Not to say that, you know, certain people in certain areas won't be affected by it, but I think the Republicans need to kind of step their game up a little bit, you know.
Well,
going back to some stuff that's just kind of predated it.
But see, I see Republicans as just doing and being what Republicans are. I've argued time and time again, Gary, these people act the way they do because it's all they know. The Republican Party hasn't had an original, fresh idea since maybe 1858, and those ideas they stole. Because there was an abolition movement long before there was ever a Republican Party.
Well, I think the energy thing, you know, you look at Boone Pickens and all the other people who were supporting Bush and all these other people, now you got Paulson coming across the line. I think the country is such a devastating. I mean, this impact of the housing and things, I think it's such an impact. I think even some of the upper-level Republicans realize they're going to have to try to work out something with a Democrat. And I think that's ultimately, I think that's what's going to probably decide this election. I think the Republicans, even some of the top Republicans, I mean, I do agree that there's a certain amount of them that are, like, corrupt. But I do know some good Republicans, and a lot of the ones I know, that they really do have an understanding that the neocons and all these other people sold them a bad deal of goods, and, you know, they have to move away from that. And that's why I think you're seeing some more people shift toward the Democrats this year. Or they're just not going to show up to vote, which I think that's what ultimately is going to happen. They're just not going to show up.
Well, it won't break my heart if the Republicans stay home.
Yeah, I think a lot of them won't.
Go vote for Bob Barr. That works for me.
Yeah, in Georgia, we can take Georgia.
Well, good to hear from you, Gary.
I'm
glad you did. I'm always glad to hear from you.
Okay, man. All right.
Take care now.
Keep it safe. All right.
Go and try. Bye. Our buddy Gary calling from Maryland.
Hey, Bob. It's Kevin from Brooklyn.
Hey, Kevin. What's up?
Yeah, it's been a while.
It has been. You all right?
Yeah, everything's fine. It's just I'm working at a later shift, so it's kind of like, you know, get off at 7, don't come until 8, so I'm missing 2/3 of the show.
Oh, okay.
And I'm so sorry about that. I try to catch it, like, the day after. But, you know, I want to let you know that I'm still out there, and I'm still a huge fan, huge supporter, and all that other stuff. But, getting down to business, you know, with this guy who shot up the church.
Yeah.
Hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah. I wonder if he would have done the same thing if it was a Baptist church.
Well, no, because
he was a pretty liberal.
No. No, he wouldn't have done it if it was a Baptist church. Because his whole thing was to go where he perceived the liberals to be.
Oh, okay. And it's just, And this is not the first time a serial killer has had conservative ideology. John Wayne Gacy, very active in the Republican Party.
Oh, yeah, well, the BTK killer. You know, the guy was a registered Republican. That's who these people are. Timothy McVeigh, okay? David Koresh was not some liberal. He was insane. I mean, he really was insane, but he wasn't a liberal.
He was just against government altogether, survival of the fittest, which is the libertarian wing of the Republican Party. You know, it's just amazing to me how they could take this stuff and twist it. Because the thing is, okay, you know, isn't the food stamps here dependent on a liberal idea?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, what kind of logic is this?
Well, no. See, that's the temptation is to say that this guy's nuts because, you know, he's pissed off because he can't find a job. His food stamps have been cut off, and he's sitting there listening to right-wing radio day in and day out, and they're telling him that it's the liberals' fault. You know, there's no liberals out there cutting food stamp benefits. We're trying to add to them, if anything. There's no liberals out there saying that we want him not. That, you know, liberals aren't responsible for the fact that all the engineering jobs are in Bangalore. That's Republicans doing. But the only way that he can make that leap is for him to listen to right wing radio and have them telling him that everything that has been done to harm him has been done by liberals.
Yeah. Now this is not the first time. You know, go back to the first Bush administration when stuff like this is going on, they blame the Japanese.
Yeah. Absolutely. I remember the Japan backlash and hatred of the Reagan era.
Oh, yeah. They blame the, you know, and this is what they do. When the economy's in the crapper, which Republicans are very good at doing, they resort to bigotry.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember, but, you know, like when I was living in D.C. area, I used to go off the weekends in West Virginia.
Yeah.
You know, my neighbor's house there. She's thinking about selling the house and getting out of it because, like, she went down there the other day and it's like the colors are starting to show because they are so scared of Obama. And this is Berkeley County. A lot of these people are commuters from D.C. into West.
Oh, one of these days, Berkeley County is just going to secede from West Virginia because it's barely West Virginia as it is.
Yeah.
But, I mean, look, I mean, I have these conversations and, you know, I can't vote for Obama. I'm a Democrat, but I can't vote for Obama. Yeah.
Exactly.
And he's
a Muslim.
Right. And his mother, was an atheist.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, it really challenges me because I want to grab him by the throat, but, you know, I don't.
Yeah. You know, she's literally thinking about selling that because she's fine. These are people she's lived with for 20-some-odd years on a part-time basis, but they know her.
Well, it's like that. It's like that one comment I saw on one of the threads about the Knoxville shooting, where the people said, you know, this is why we quit going to church because we knew that sooner or later somebody would try to come in and shoot up our church. Because it was liberal and because it was, and see, this is, there's so many insidious layers to this onion, Kevin.
Oh, yeah.
Because he targeted this church, A, because they were liberals, but they also had a sign outside welcoming gay folks to come to church there.
Oh, yeah.
And what's this going to do to gay individuals? Who would like to go into a church, a welcoming church like that?
Well, obviously in Knoxville, it ain't going to happen.
But it ain't just going to be Knoxville, Kevin. It's going to be...
Or that region of the red state America. It ain't going to happen.
But I don't even necessarily... See, I'm not disagreeing to be disagreeable. I don't think you can limit it to red state America because these freakish, hateful, murderous, the right-wing thugs are in every state in the union. That's why that's why I define it as a civil war.
Yeah.
They're coming for us, and most of us don't even have a gun to defend ourselves with, so we're just going to be like lambs led to the slaughter.
Well, put it this way, I like to see them come in Brooklyn. I really
you're like that great line that great line from Casablanca where Bogart and the Nazi colonel are talking, and he says, can you see us in New York, Mr. Blaine? And Bogart says, well, there are some parts of New York I wouldn't even advise the Nazis to invade. You know,
exactly. I think parts of Brooklyn, because I tell you, once I can say, growing up around here, growing up in New York City, I've experienced the 80s with the crack epidemic and all that. And as bad as things be, a drug dealer is a lot of things, but he ain't shooting up no church.
Yeah.
And that's all the bottom line is.
Yeah.
A drug dealer may be a lot of things, but he's not going to go into a church and unleash hell on it.
No.
At
least not deliberately. There might be something with a drive-by, but...
Probably even not. Okay.
Yeah.
And I quit some blood for the start of the year, but
well, it's like,
I can say,
go ahead.
They ain't gonna do that.
Well, it's like the email we had earlier this evening where the writer said, liberals, we march, we protest, if we're really, really in high dudgeon, some of us might spike a tree. Or set fire to an SUV or something, and and that's the funny thing. The FBI, the federal authorities don't have any problem whatsoever calling that domestic terrorism. This guy, I have yet to see the word domestic terrorism used in relation to this homicidal right-wing thug.
Well, he hasn't done it big enough. He's got to go on the level of, in Texas.
No. If he had killed 50 people inside that church, he still would not be called a right wing domestic terrorist.
Well, he has to have the C4 and the nerve gas like David Koresh.
Yeah, maybe, but still, I don't think he gets. I don't think it gets it because it's hard to get anybody to call Timothy McVeigh a terrorist. example, Eric Rudolph, the guy who bombed an abortion clinic in Birmingham and shot doctors. Okay,
yeah.
You can't get that guy to. You can't get the media to call him a terrorist.
When in fact
both the guy in Knoxville, Eric Rudolph, Timothy McVeigh, they were all right wingers, and every one of their acts were straight out of the terrorism handbook. You couldn't tell a difference between him between them and Abu Abbas or the guy who shoved the guy off the Achille Lauro. Terrorism is terrorism, but we have this bigoted racist notion in this country that it's not terrorism. If a right winger does it. I mean, it's the ultimate and most sickening manifestation of that thing you see on the internet called IOKIYAR. It's okay if you're a Republican.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's the same thing with our foreign policy. Iran is a nuclear power, never lit off an atomic bomb, but North Korea gets a pass.
Well, there's that, yeah. There's the fact that we invaded a non-terrorist state, Iraq, in retribution for a right-wing fundamentalist terrorist attack on New York and Washington.
Yeah.
So, there, you see what I'm saying? I don't know, and I don't want to know, Kevin. I do not want to know. What it takes to start the dialogue in this country about the danger that right-wing conservatives and right-wing hate radio pose, not on some philosophical level, but to mommies and daddies and children. This guy went in and shot up a church where 25 children were putting on a performance of Annie for the love of God.
Oh.
It was in the middle of that performance this went on.
Well, you know what? I say it all boils down to this right-wing mentality. America really hasn't suffered enough. Okay? America hasn't suffered on the level that the Germans did during and post-World War II. Or the Argentines did, or Spain under Franco, or Italy under Mussolini. Or go back to France under Napoleon, or...
But see, you know. I don't know if it is...
But America suffers on that, because America really has...
No. We didn't do that during the Great Depression. We didn't do that.
Because we had a functioning government during the Great Depression.
Well,
what was it? The wedding of Grover Norquist?
Yeah, drown it in a bathtub? Norquist? Yeah.
This government...
But, I don't know... I think we're too big. The country is just too big.
They just take a tragedy like that, where it was partitioned like Germany for 40 years to wake a lot of these people in rural America or red state America up. All I know, McCain wins.
I don't know. Maybe
I'm going to be around to witness it.
Okay, I'm going to be a real horse's ass now, Kevin. Maybe if the NASCAR tracks shut down and the Walmarts start closing their doors, red state, so-called Republican voting, gun-toting, gun-clinging, pasty-faced, doughy white America will suddenly look up and say, hey, we did this to ourselves. But odds are, Kevin, they won't, because even if that's happening, Limbaugh and O'Reilly and Hannity and Savage and Bortz and the rest of that filthy crowd will still be there screaming that it's the others' fault. Because that's their job.
Well, that was the job of, head of propaganda in the Third Reich, Goebbels.
Goebbels, yeah, but, you know, he had a little help out the door. We don't have that. You know, we're liberals, so Limbaugh's safe. And Hannity is safe, and O'Reilly is safe, and Savage is safe, because nobody wants anybody killed.
Well, the thing is, it's not a matter of wanting everybody killed, because I'm telling you, one day, a huge Indian conglomerate is going to buy out those networks and probably get behind off the air.
Not if they're making money, it won't, Kevin.
Or a Chinese network, or whatever. No, they're going to say something wrong about the Indians and Chinese, and it's going to piss somebody off, and they're going to get fired. And the worst thing you can do to a wealthy person, more than kill them or maim them, is making them into poor people.
That may be the one thing they won't tolerate. Hey, Kevin, I got to roll on, but good to hear from you, brother.
Okay, good to hear from you, brother.
Take care. Sure. All right, bye now. So that's it. And I'm going to say one last thing on this, and I'm not going to beat on this too much, but I mentioned this at the top of the program, and I want you to know, because it struck a nerve with me, because we do we talk about the fact that you guys are what keeps the horn going, but I want to say with absolutely no equivocation whatsoever that as the show was starting and I opened this email, and I read, why do you need progressive media like Op-Ed News? Because the right-wing toxic hate media inspire people like Jim D. Adkison to take shotguns into Unitarian churches and kill liberals. Do you think the lame corp stream media like CNN give a damn except for the news value? We do, and we need your support urgently. I know what it's like to be in the tight spot. But you know what? I have to condemn that. I have to condemn that. Because the answer is, and look, this is my answer. If you've got $20 laying around, send it down to that church in Knoxville. Send it to the Unitarian Universalist Church in Knoxville. Let them do something for the families that were shattered beyond all recognition by some right-wing, goddamnable, hateful son of a bitch. And I guarantee you, what you send will be doing the work of Christ and the Buddha and Confucius and Mohammed and every other holy person that has ever walked on this planet. Do that. Do that. Because you know what? I guarantee you let's be plain. If any person had killed that single person in Pastor John Hagee's church, that person would be a terrorist. Okay? But domestic right-wing terrorists are putting American people that they deem to be liberal under a sentence of death. And for me to sit here and watch some brother or sister so-called liberal organization, progressive organization, try to fundraise on that? I'll turn out the lights first. Honest to God, I will. So let that be said. If you've got a couple of bucks laying around that you were thinking about sending to the Horn, this day, I tell you, send it to Knoxville. Send it to Knoxville. They need it worse than we do. So that's it for tonight. Peter Godbold is a rerun. He's had a long day at work loading a computer. So that'll pretty much close. The broadcast day today. Join us again tomorrow. Guy James will be back tomorrow. Yay! And we will have a full broadcast day for you. Thanks to Coal River Mountain Watch.